Good morning, everyone. If you are joining us today in chambers, you have joined the Financial and Economic Resiliency Committee meeting. And Raphael, if you would just let everyone know how they could join remotely if they wish to do so.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair. So today's meeting of the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee has been scheduled in a hybrid format, with a quorum of the committee physically present and remaining members, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually by Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting virtually, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499. That's toll-free, and enter the webinar ID, which is 863-6059-5462 pound. Or you may log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 863-6059-5462. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if you're using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if you're participating by phone.
Thank you so much. And Jason, well, good morning. I think you've got a couple of announcements, right?
Yes, I just have one. Thank you. Item number 14 will be deferred from this meeting.
Okay. Item 14 is deferred. And item 13, which is a capital projects, we're going to be reviewing a proposal regarding Lincoln Road, the eastern portion, and that is has a time certain of 10:30 a.m.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So we'll be hearing that at 10:30. And I know that our colleague, Commissioner Areola, is on his way. He'll be here in a few minutes, but he said to go ahead and get started with a couple of discussions. So I'm going to call up item number one first so we can get a quick briefing on the status. We had this last month, and we want to get a quick briefing. Is Jose here? No. Okay. Well, we won't do that one now. Okay. There he is. Hi, Jose. We're calling up item number one. So we want a quick briefing on the status. Last month we learned, I guess there's some complications with Española Way, the closure of Española Way East. So we want to just get an update on that and on the Ocean Drive status. We don't need to get into the Drexel. So go ahead with that. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So as you pointed out, Mr. Chair, last month I provided an update of where we are on this project. We finalized the design for tactical urbanism improvements along Española Way East, as well as 14th Place alleyway. Those were submitted to Miami-Dade County after close to a month of being reviewed. The county rejected those plans essentially with one comment, comment being Ocean Drive, and how that is still outstanding. A permit for Ocean Drive remains outstanding, and the county's concern is that because this closure would occur very close to Ocean Drive and, in fact, even affect 14th Place, they would like a final configuration for the promenade to be determined prior to approving this. So that is where we still are. At the last Finance Committee, there was some conversation amongst committee members to reach out to different members, at the leadership at Miami-Dade County to see if they could untangle this one from Ocean Drive, and I'm not sure where those conversations are.
Has anything happened in the last month on Ocean Drive?
Yes. We had a community meeting on June 1st. I believe it was well attended. Many people spoke. We presented both concepts, Alternative 1 and Alternative 2, that were developed by Miami-Dade County Department of Transportation and Public Works. Those two alternatives, according to the county, would be essentially alternatives that could be permitted by them. So we focused on those two. We received feedback. Most participants who spoke either spoke in favor or against the promenade. They really didn't get into the specifics of we prefer option one or we prefer option two. And there is an item going to the June 28th City Commission meeting to discuss and take action on a motion made by the Public Safety Neighborhood Quality of Life Committee, which actually expresses support for the current promenade and for an extension of that promenade. As part of that discussion, we'll also be talking about alternatives one and two. And internally, the city administration has met on various occasions to deliberate the two options, and we're leaning towards option one, county option one.
So the county's come up with two options, mm-hmm. and neither one of those include what is there now or what the... What
it's a variation. They do include a promenade, but it opens... The two county options open the promenade to vehicular traffic during the early morning hours, 6 a.m. to 11 a.m., which aligns with the time periods when most freight deliveries occur, and that's to try to facilitate some of that freight delivery that's currently occurring from the alleyway and presenting some issues with operational safety issues on the alleyway.
I have a question on that. So that option one that the county has presented, is it limited vehicular access during those hours, or is it full vehicular access during those hours?
During those hours, it would be full vehicular access on Ocean Drive, southbound only.
But you're saying it's primarily to facilitate like the freight type of activity and deliveries and that type of stuff. And then after those hours, it would go back to the alley.
After those hours, the gate, the arm gate would close, and it would operate as it, Ocean Drive would operate as it's operating today. However, at that point, the freight deliveries would need to occur from the alleyway. The alleyway would be regulated.
But it would only be freight delivery going into the alleyways. At that point, all other type of traffic wouldn't be going into the alleyway.
Correct. That's the primary concern that the county has, is that currently all vehicular traffic is going through that alleyway.
And really, what they just should do is, rather than open up traffic during certain hours of the day, they're just shifting those freight deliveries towards, I think it's after 11, into the alleyway, just limit the alleyway completely just to the freight deliveries and not that general traffic. If it's okay in the afternoon, why wouldn't it be okay in the morning?
Yeah, I'm not sure that if this street or the alley is open. I think it's probably open for everyone. I'm not sure that you can.
I think the option that the county had or presented, there's an option that shows an arm there, correct?
At the alleyway to restrict traffic to only service vehicles. And that would be 24/7.
Who would be there to open and close that?
Most likely a security officer similar to the one that's there today operating the arm gate at 14th Place. That's under a manual operation. We are also looking into automatic arm gates that would not require human intervention.
Yeah, but who would have a clicker to open it? Every driver?
Emergency? No. Mainly for emergency vehicles. We're trying to, address.
Okay. But you're saying we have an item on the commission meeting to discuss this. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Next week.
On Wednesday.
Okay. Good. All right. Well, we'll discuss it then. So, we're going to keep this here until it gets resolved. So,
should we have it to for the administration to bring it back at an appropriate time, not a specific month? Would make sense.
Yeah, let's bring it now for September if we need to bring it early.
We'll ask for a deferral if we're not ready. Yeah. Okay, so
we'll just bring it back in September, and we'll see what we get resolved next week if we do an urging or what we do. So, okay, with that, let me call up number two, item two. This should be quick as well. A quick update on, I think we were hiring. Who's going to be taking this one? Someone from property management, maybe? Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
You're recognized. Tell us. We just need a brief update. I think we were hiring a consultant, right?
We did. Following our last FERC meeting, we did have a purchase order issued with AMS Consulting. We had a kickoff meeting on June 6th, and following our kickoff meeting, they provided us with a revised work plan based on our input. That was on June 16th.
Okay. Can you give us a what's the scope of their work in general, and how quickly will they be doing it?
So their scope of the work, they added two additional tasks, which is the discovery phase and a governance phase. And we're looking at completing this project within 120 to 150 days.
Within 120?
20 days.
Correct. Okay. And this would then give us a, I guess, further definition of a concept?
Absolutely. As part of the governance phase, if I may, just to reiterate. So the governance phase, they would provide the recommendations evaluated on the stage and provide what would be the recommendations for the governance and the management structure of the future operation of the Byron Carlyle. And they would have already input of what they consider would be the correct mix of cultural partners to occupy that space as well.
Okay, so they're looking at multiple partners, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right way to go. And then what about the infrastructure itself? Are they looking at making a recommendation on, because I know we had this group, the Friends of the Byron mm-hmm. Carlyle, and I assume they're starting with that as a concept, but are they going to be coming back with an idea of what we should be doing in terms of infrastructure?
They will. They will. That is part of their governance phase, and that will define exactly what kind of building should be built there, facilities should be built there.
Okay.
And they do have the responses for all of, that they have received from all of the, those have been interested in terms of the RFLI, including the Friends of the Byron.
And are they looking at putting the workforce housing on top, or is that being contemplated?
That's part of the process.
Yeah.
We'll see what they come up with.
Yeah, I feel strongly about that because I think mm-hmm. it'll throw off revenue that could be used to support the operations of the center. So, okay, let's bring this one back in September as well and see where we're at. Okay,
yep.
So we'll... And then I know we've deferred a couple of big ones the last couple of months. I want to get into the parking. You and I both have one, a commissioner on parking on items 4 and 5. So that's going to be, I think, good morning, Monica. How are you? So we had, I know we had one a pilot program that we approved that went back to commission. I think it was approved by commission. So one of the things that we're looking at trying to use technology and also to enhance our enforcement, and then I know Commissioner Fernandez, you have item 5, which we were talking about, how we can close the loophole on the disability parking and especially targeting those big parking lots like the one next to the Eden Rock, where I think you have some days 100 disability placards that are there all day, right?
Correct. Good morning. Monica Beltran, Parking Director. You're correct, Commissioner, and actually even more than 100, possibly 40% of that lot, which has like over 400 spaces, can be taken up by placard users.
Wow. And so... Let me let you lead off on that.
Sure.
I want to talk about enforcement in general, but with the disability, why don't you go ahead and let us know what you're thinking. I don't know if the staff drafted something or if we're working on something.
For sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our city attorneys and the administration for cooperating in the drafting of this ordinance. Under code, individuals with disabled parking permits are allowed a minimum amount of time of free parking, and usually that's recognized beyond that minimum amount of time. I think county code establishes 4 hours.
Correct.
But if they extend beyond those 4 hours, they can continue being there. What this ordinance does is that it establishes a registration requirement. If you have a handicap placard, you can continue getting the 4 hours for free. But if you desire to continue getting beyond those 4 hours, you need to come now under the provisions of this ordinance, register with the city, and also provide information as to the medical professional prescribing this placard. We're not asking for anyone for details as to the conditions.
Right.
Well, we just want to maintain a registry of who is the person that's prescribing this placard. Again, why are we doing this? We're doing this because we have seen a rampant abuse of disabled parking decals. People who are not medical professionals are selling these illegally online, and it's being abused and is straining the availability of these parking spaces in our public parking lots. And ultimately, who is really affected by this is the disabled individual. And this helps legitimize that process. I don't know if our city attorney wishes to expand any further as to the details or give any clarity, further clarity on the details of this ordinance.
You've covered it very well, Commissioner Fernandez, but thank you. I think the premise is that we provide a lot more free parking than we're obligated to do by law. And so the idea would be that we would default to the statutory minimums for what we have to provide in terms of free parking to persons with disabled placards, but then create this voluntary registration program so that folks who have been using it are residents agree to elect to go through this process to share with us the basic information about who is the physician that issued the certification for this placard so that we could verify it and provide a consent and a release for us to be able to do that, then they'll be able to provide to have free parking, the same free parking that they have today. So it's for the folks who don't register that then the statutory default would apply, and then we would be imposing parking charges after the 4 hours, or in some cases, in other instances, it could be even less than 4 hours, depending on the location of the parking space.
And Mr. Attorney, one of the points that you mentioned here is that this is a voluntary program, and this is important because individuals that come to do an 8-hour shift or a 10-hour shift, they're coming with disabled placards and occupying these spaces, and so this would, in essence, target those individuals. There may be disabled individuals who indeed are coming to work these 8-hour or 10-hour shifts, but if they want to benefit of this parking because they need it, they'll have the opportunity to register with the city and show provide this information of the physician that prescribed it, but it also discourages the individual who's doing it fraudulently. The individual who's coming fraudulently to use a parking space that's not intended for their use. And so, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your consideration and the committee's consideration of this ordinance.
If I may, Commissioner.
Hey, you're recognized.
Thank you. So whenever there's a financial incentive for something, people are going to pursue it, right? And with these disabled placards, which we know many are issued fraudulently, in fact, somebody was arrested for this, what we're doing is anybody that gets one of these fraudulently, reportedly for like $200, they actually have bought themselves a citywide parking permit. Beyond a citywide, because it gives them access to all the garages, to all the parking lots, to on-street parking, basically carte blanche, park for free wherever you want. And yes, it impacts the disabled. So the intent of the law is accessibility, right? And the intent of the law is also making it equal for everybody to have the same access. And it has turned into this financial incentive of I'll get a placard and I will never pay for parking. You have two separate items yet related, right? We were talking about lots and garages, which we are allowed today to charge for. We're talking about on street, which we can limit to 4 hours. I'd say that these are one, and that this ordinance covers all areas. And it is a great benefit to those who have disabled placards that were legally issued, because right now there's more access for them. And it's great benefit to them. Yes, there's an inconvenience, possibly. We'll try to make it as easy as possible, particularly for residents. But ultimately, it takes us to the intent of the law, and somewhat removes that financial incentive, which was never the intent. So this is great legislation. It's kind of groundbreaking. And I would say that it's all-encompassing. It's parking, period, with the provisions of limited parking, which is also allowed by law.
So this would cover both on-street parking lots and garages, right?
I would recommend that it cover all public parking.
But as drafted, Mr. Attorney, does it cover all parking?
As drafted, the ordinance is in your packet, and it does cover all parking.
Okay.
Yes.
Correct.
I think that should be. And then is this, the registration would be for anyone or just for city residents?
And so it would be for anyone, but I want to call your attention to the fact that we actually honor international placards as well. So if you came from China and you had one in their country, you get free parking here. So anyone who wants to get free parking would need to register.
And in the registration process, would they have to show up in person with their ID to prove that they are the person with the same name as on the placard?
I would say that they need to. And I would say that we as a city would do everything possible to help our residents be the least inconvenienced by nature of being a resident and customer service. So at the very first time, and they have to fill out this form, we've already spoken to our IT department to see what kind of permit. It just translates into a city permit for people who have disabled placards.
Okay, so if they register, they would be permitted to park for more than 4 hours for free. Is that right?
If registered. By the way, the law allows us to put a four-hour minimum. We don't. People actually get unlimited free parking.
Right.
So if registered, everything would stay the same. So nobody loses any coverage.
If someone, right now, someone has a placard, they can park all day there, right? Mm-hmm. But the county ordinance is you get 4 hours of free parking.
Yes, unless we limit it to 2 hours, then they get 2 hours. But they get a maximum of four. We just don't impose it.
Okay. And so if we're saying if they register, they could still get 8 or 10 hours, unlimited hours.
Correct.
If they register.
Now, the registration allows everything to stay the same, but it gives us the opportunity to...
I almost would go a little bit further and say if you register, you're allowed to stay there for more than 4 hours, but you have to pay for it.
Correct, and that is the law. If you stay more than 4 hours, you're supposed to pay for it, but we in the city of Miami Beach have not enforced that.
That's a law today.
That's a law today.
Right. Perhaps,
how do you feel about that?
I'm thinking that perhaps what might be appropriate is, like, for example, we may have residents that may need that extended period of time.
Yeah.
But I think if it's not a resident, I'm kind of like with your line of thinking. If it's not a resident, maybe give a different option.
Can we do that? If you're a resident and you register, you can have more than 4 hours. But if you're not a resident of the city of Miami Beach,
you have a limit.
You have the 4 hours. You can stay if you register more than 4 hours, but you must pay for the time.
Well, that would be the rule if you don't register, right?
Right.
Under the county law, you get up to 4 hours, unless it's a timed space where you limit the maximum time to park in that space.
But this would be like a registration. Two-part registration. There'd be one registration for a residence and another registration for non-residents.
So you could certainly do that for the residents, for the extended parking to provide the benefits that we provide today, which is free parking unlimited for persons who have disabled placards. What I'm saying is that the non-resident then would just not register because what you're offering them is what they would be able to get without having to register at all.
Yeah.
Maybe, Commissioner, we should see... Let's see what impact. Does this yield an improvement? And if not, do we need to come back and make any tweaks to it? Like, for example, if it's not addressing the problems, we need to come back and look at the issue of employees. Do we need to let's say, okay, you can continue parking for more than 4 hours for free if you register, but if you're not a city resident, you have a limit of 6 hours. Or 8 hours, setting a certain limit foreign.
One of the really great things is we're getting ready to have a lot of data because, you know, we have a pilot program on 6 parking lots, and one of the things we want to do is to track how many of these disability placards are, you know, being used in those. I think it's the pilot program is
5.
Is 5 parking lots. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and one of the things we're doing is trying to track data so we will know. So when is that pilot program going to start?
So they're finalizing the, we've already assigned the spaces. We've already finished the parking side. It's in the legal side. There's a draft agreement, I believe. Commissioner, you know, doing hourly enforcement is difficult because you have to timestamp. What this does, talking about PAVE, what this does is it allows us to share a database with PAVE. And so in the use of cameras, we can better address the disabled placards because the data is there as a citywide, basically.
Okay. So when is, and I don't know, are they, could I ask you a couple of questions? Go ahead. Tell us who you are.
Ralph Andrade. I represent the PAVE Mobility Company.
And when is that going to, when are we going to start the pilot? I know it's been approved. I guess it's in legal now?
Yeah, we have a call, I believe, scheduled for Monday, the 26th, right? And I think we'll be ready to wrap it up rather quickly. I don't think there's any real issues.
And so when would the pilot, how long will it take to put the stuff in? Is there 30 days, the equipment in and so forth?
Yeah, so as soon as we execute, we could install, you know, within a week. I think the only potential holdup might be permitting. So to the extent the city can help us facilitate and expedite the permitting, the cameras will go up immediately.
Because I think this program is going to give us a lot of insight into this disability, the placard situation. And so, and I know it was the pilot's going to run for 3 or 4 months?
It's up to 6 months. It's from 3 to 6 months, I believe.
Okay.
But you'll start collecting data immediately. So, I mean, after the first month, you'll have
all right,
some.
Well, I think this is really going to be good because we're going to get all this data to tell us just how many placards are being used and so forth and so on. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So are you going to move your item?
I'll move my item. I'll make a motion.
Okay. So I will I'll second it, and I will support it. And I would just say that to the extent that we'll send this to the commission to get it approved, and then, you know, I don't think I'll be here by the time we get all the data back, but I think that if it's working, then we don't need to tweak it, but if we find that there's still too many loopholes, then we can go this avenue with resident versus non-resident.
And if you're not here, then you can call me and give me...
Okay, perfect.
Then we won't have sunshine.
We won't have sunshine. Okay, that go ahead, Monica.
So, Commissioner, we have 2 items.
Yes, exactly. So that's one. That's the one item. Now, the other piece is I want to talk about enforcement.
Correct.
Yes. So tell me what you want me to hear about enforcement, and then I'm going to tell you what I want to hear about enforcement. Go ahead.
Okay. So I did a study back on our staffing back to 2010. So in 2016, we started the freight loading zone enforcement. And we added 7 officers and full-time officers, and we went from 28 to 35 officers. But we had 21 part-timers. Somewhere along the line, it was decided to have fewer full-timers and more part-timers. We have now realized that after the pandemic, it's harder to keep part-timers because people do need to work to make a living. We grew from 15 in 2021, 15 full-timers, to our current 25. And we have requested for the next fiscal year 30 full-timers and 20 part-timers. And that brings staffing to 50. And it is the first time that we will have 30 full-timers since 2019. So, we are growing our staff in recognition of, number one, enforcement. There are a lot of construction in the city. That's another level of enforcement. And also in recognition to the fact that our revenues and our activity is pretty much in keeping to pre-pandemic levels. So we were planning, or we had already requested, an additional 5 full-timers, but then fewer full-timers than fewer part-timers. Still 50, but a different grouping.
So I thought that some months back we agreed to convert all the part-time people to full-time people. Is that, wasn't that last year that we decided we wanted to do that?
No, I think that was the conversation somewhat following our return from the pandemic, but we have never eliminated part-timers because they allow us extra coverage during peak times. So I believe basically we have a full contingency and then we reinforce with part-timers. So part-timers are important to us. But what I would agree with you, which was different from prior, from my predecessor, is that we shouldn't have a 50-50, nor should we have more part-timers than full-timers. Full-timers should be the cadre. They should be the base for the department, and part-timers should be the fillers.
Okay, so did you, how many full-time people do you have today?
So today we have an even split, 25-25 budgeted.
Okay. And you, those people are on board now? They're on payroll now, or you're they're
right
open
now,
slots?
I have 2 full-time vacancies, people that just retired, and I have, I think, 8 part-time vacancies, 4 about to be filled. So we have, we'll have 4 vacancies in 2. Okay. So we're 40 right now, but I must say, to be fair, that because we have that savings anyway in staffing and personnel, that we are paying overtime to get all our jobs accomplished.
Okay, and in your budget, because we're in the budget cycle right now, in your budget, did you request additional funds for the headcount that you want to convert the part-time to full-time?
So the headcount stays the same, but more full-timers, so 30 full-timers and 20, as opposed to the even split today of 25-25.
Aren't you going to need a little bit more money to pay benefits and things like that for full-time people?
Correct. Yep.
So
the benefits is a big difference.
Did you make
difference.
That request in your budget request?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Jason.
Yes, if I could just add on to that. Yes, we do have that enhancement for that conversion, and that'll be part of the July 21st FERC budget briefing on the operating for consideration by the commission.
Okay. So, guys, I support this. I think we need more enforcement. Are you okay with that, Commissioner Arreola? So, Commissioner Fernandez, are you? Okay, so then show that unanimous that there's a favorable recommendation that we want to recommend in the budget cycle that we increase the number of full-time people, and it'll be 30 and 20?
Correct.
And we would support the budget adjustment necessary to accommodate that.
Okay. So just to summarize, because there were 2 items, I didn't get to summarize that, number 5. So number 5 is it was a unanimous approval to go to the commission with the ordinance as presented, and secondly is an endorsement for the parking enhancement that is under consideration for the 24th budget amendment, which we will discuss on the 21st of July.
Okay. Exactly. Both
Thank
of
you.
Those we've done unanimously. So.
And one more question.
Sure.
Because I'd like to know where to follow up. Can we call 4 your item? Is that completed? Because
I think that
the
was 4.
Passes.
I think that was 4.
Yeah, that,
so
that,
4 and 5.
So it doesn't have to come back here because the enforcement part or the program part is already featured in 5.
Well, the 5 is just the disability placards. 4 is related to enforcement. And I know it said
I was showing them both
technical
as closed
capabilities
with
to complement as the operation partner, including So that's what this was intended to be, is a discussion about enforcement, and in item 4. So there, item 4 was more related to enforcement.
Correct.
Item 5 was related to bid.
Correct, and that's how I was. That's why I addressed them both that way. As 5 was the ordinance, 4 was the endorsement on the staffing, and that would close out both items. Both would go to commission, showing that.
Yeah, okay. And let me say on enforcement, and again, I won't be here after November, but I'll be calling Commissioner Fernandez. So I feel strongly that the city needs to be doing more enforcement. We're not doing, that's just my humble opinion, we're not doing enough enforcement. And so I'm very supportive of getting these additional resources. And to the extent that it's still a problem, then I'm going to be calling Commissioner Fernandez and saying maybe you need 60 people or 70 people. Because I think they pay for themselves, by the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm on the same page as you, that I agree that we need to do enforcement that's consistent. You need to have the resources.
Yeah. Okay. I have a question. Go ahead. Since we're on this item and it's mentioned in the analysis, so we do not charge parking rates to vehicles displaying a Florida toll exception permit?
No. Those are at a higher level. That's federal law. And these are people that have more, I guess, a more serious disability. Those are very, very strongly controlled. Florida exception, toll exception. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Those are rare.
Okay, because I know that like for example that the state gives a discount to certain people to have certain types of electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles and that type of stuff.
Vehicles that are specially equipped. So these are vehicles that are specially equipped, like with hand controls and stuff like that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we were not giving, you know, a parking discount now or not charging parking to a big percentage of our users. So, okay, got it. Thank you for the clarity.
So we'll close both of these.
Yes.
So the one on the ordinance will go. On the other one, it wouldn't be a resolution to commission something that could just be you wanted me to verbally update on the July 21st or actually – okay, we'll handle it that way.
At a budget workshop, we can just say, look, you know, FERC endorsed this plan unanimously.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay, thanks, Monica.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
Let's take item number 3. Hopefully that'll be quick because I want to meet my 10:30. Update on Economic Development Department regarding steps taken to improve business retention and attractiveness. This is your item, Vice Mayor Areola. Who are we going to hear from?
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning. How are you? Tell us who you are.
I'm Heather Shaw. I am the Assistant Director for Economic Development. Happy Friday. Today is actually National Hydration Day, so please take in all your water. We're trying to tell
everybody.
Okay. Perfect. 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 I'm happy to be here to give you a brief update of what economic development has been doing in the last quarter. We're very excited. We've been the small team that we have has been very active. On everything that we can do to support the community and to attract and retain our businesses. I'm going to start with our targeted areas. We've been working with the 41st Street Corridor, as well as with our colleagues at CIP on the Streetscape Revitalization Program that continues to move forward, and the community is very excited. We continue to involve our 44th Street Committee in all of those presentations, and we'll be able to update you soon as that project continues to move on. And then more closely is we are working with the 41st Street Business Improvement District, the BID, and its formation. Currently, it is out for a vote of the businesses, which I believe concludes on the 27th of this month, and then it will come before you with the responses from those businesses. And then we are also, we put out a RFLI on public-owned lots in 41st Street, and we will be reporting more to you about that as well. As I move forward, also our vacant storefront cover program continues to be very successful. We have an additional 28 covers that we have put on businesses, and it is continuing to beautify the corridors, especially when we have large-scale events that are occurring. And then also with our North Beach CRA, Community Redevelopment Agency, it is moving forward with great speed. The office is turning out to be a really great advantage for us, and we have a lot of businesses and residents that are stopping in. We have office hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 9:30 to 4:30, and it is serving to be a great opportunity for us to educate the community about the CRA. We have been involved with the Normandy Fountain Business Association and some of their events that they've been having to make sure that we are educating the community, which is actually really great. I go to most of those, and it's good to be able to clarify to the community the benefits of the CRA.
Commissioner Hill, go ahead.
Talking about the Normandy Fountain, Heather, what is your knowledge of the ability of restaurants that, you know, are let's say in the spaces that are there in Normandy Fountain to take the plaza space for outdoor seating, for outdoor tables? Because as
the restaurants that abut.
Yeah, as I understand, they can't do that right now. And so I just want to get to the bottom of that, because as the person who sponsored the creation of that plaza, the whole intent and vision was so that people could dine outside there. But I'm told by folks that they can't get table permits. Is that true?
So I will check on that for you, Commissioner, because my understanding is that there's limited seating that is out there and that some of the
businesses
want to expand.
You're right. It might be limit. So I want to take a look at that, because apparently the limit is very low and it can be dealt with administratively. So if Alina needs our permission, I'd like for us to entertain that, because it's obscenely low. Okay, so meaning it doesn't make economic sense for people to do it. Administratively, we can increase that. And so if Alina's unwilling to do it herself, then maybe we'll do it by commission.
I mean, these spaces for those tables is, the economic draw for people to occupy.
But the bureaucracy and the red tape is, you know, so in the way, so I want to remove that red tape.
Well, if you'd like to make a motion.
I'd like to understand it, just to make sure. If the limit is so low that it doesn't make economic sense, then let's increase that limit. So.
Okay, I'll look into that for you, Commissioner, and get back to you as soon as possible.
I mean, that's what economic development is all about, right?
Let's try to handle it today. I see our assistant city manager is getting closer to the microphone. So, hi, who are you?
Hi, good morning, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. Raquel Williams, Assistant City Manager. I do want to highlight that perhaps this matter is governed by our new concession agreement rather than the sidewalk cafe permitting process that we previously had. And so we will do everything we can to identify those businesses that wish to participate in that program and walk them through the process. The CRA office is on the same block as those restaurants, and so we have access to them. We actually visit them, and this is not a concern that was raised to any of our staff.
Is there any restriction on the number of chairs and tables that a restaurant could apply for? What's the rule on that?
I will defer to our public works director, but I believe it has to do with your seating capacity, and I know that that is heavily regulated.
And derm grease traps and things of that nature. Yeah.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. Joe Gomez, Public Works Director. The number of seats is dictated by the size of the facility, the grease trap, their ability to be able to occupy the space and how many tables they can fit within that area based on our concession agreement and our guidelines for sidewalk cafes.
And do we know if the businesses are being permitted to apply for all of the spaces that would be applicable?
Any business that is interested in having a sidewalk cafe can come in and apply through the concession agreement program with our right-of-way department.
Okay. The only potential issue I could see is if they're doing an event there, like if somebody had 30 chairs or 30 tables out there and then they're doing an event, maybe that encroaches. But, Commissioner, do you want to have them research this and come back next month and tell us?
Yeah, look, what I want to find out is, you know, I was there the other night. It was dead. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, our vision is failing. We spent so much time and effort, and there's nobody out there. And then I'm told that, you know, they're limited in how many tables they can get out there, and it doesn't make economic sense for them. So I said, okay, well, let's figure out how to make it work economically.
Right.
You know, there's got to be a number that works. And if we need to, you know, administratively or from the commission, change our concession agreements, then we'll look at that. But, you know, this is about economic development and vibrancy in the area, and the place is dead. So let's fix that.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
I do think we need to help these businesses. And a lot of times, and I remember a while back I was at the Fountain, David Sexton was there. He introduced me with to a chef that had moved here from New York, that had a vision of opening up a restaurant, and he was explaining the concerns of the expensive rent and that type of stuff. And this is where you're absolutely right, Vice Mayor, because these spaces do help make these outdoor spaces help make the interior spaces, the lease on the interior spaces, sometimes financially viable. And I'm just wondering, because if our process and bureaucracy might be too much, or not just ours, other regulatory agencies as well, you know, when we're not activating the space, what would prohibit us from putting tables there that anyone in the public could use?
Yeah, good question.
You know, because and that would help. That would help the businesses there and there and any business, not just a business in front. You know, someone goes to another business, you know, three blocks away, they can get their food, go sit there and, you know, have their lunch, have their dinner.
You're saying city tables, just have tables out there and people can just go bring their
picnic. And it's a benefit to the economy of that area because now you're providing space where people can gather, it can be activated, but we're facilitating it.
I mean, along those lines, I mean, if we want to entertain what the CRA talk about, you know, food trucks, you know, once or twice a month, like we have in North Beach over by the band show, we're used to anyway, you know, just to activate that area so people come the first Friday of every month. It's food truck night, just to spur activation.
Because the one thing I do know is that, you know, a lot of times, I know, for example, I had this conversation with Joe. The entity wouldn't be able to get, for example, a sidewalk cafe contract until they completed their grease traps.
Correct.
Because the amount of tables and occupancy they could have on the exterior space depended on the infrastructure of their grease trap and other infrastructure
Correct.
That they would have to build out. Yes, sir. But not until they completed that infrastructure would they be able then to get their outdoor space contract for the tables. But yet then that's a big risk for a business to be able to have to invest in doing all of this infrastructure that requires getting permits, hiring contractors, getting engineers, ripping up spaces from your interior business and interrupting your cash flow. And it is a big investment and a big risk when you don't know if at the end of the day, after you do all of that, if you're going to get that contract at the end of the day or not. And I'm grateful to you because we were able to work a process
Correct.
Where now the businesses don't have to take that risk. And we facilitated it and you've helped cut the red tape there.
Correct.
But to the commissioner's point, if the occupancy over there is so low, you know, we have to fix that, and maybe a way to fix it in a more streamlined way is maybe we can invest in a few tables, and where we're not having the activations at the fountain and the other activities, we allow them there, and when we have other activations, we just remove them.
So if I understand, Commissioner, it would be setting up tables that are owned by the City of Miami Beach for anyone to use.
Yeah.
Whether it's the business or some member, some resident that wants to eat their lunch out, and
why not?
Okay. So why don't we do this? Why don't we bring this back next month, and you can do two things for us: research what the Vice Mayor is saying about where we are with allowing businesses to get the maximum benefit of their opportunity to put chairs and tables, and then the second thing is, why don't you research this idea of putting some tables, city tables out there, and tell us what would be involved in that. It's not going to be a lot of capital, but there will be who's going to put them out there, who's going to maintain them, who's going to clean them, and that sort of thing. So just think through all that, and then just come back and report to us on those two items next month in July.
Okay. So the two was the return in July for looking at outdoor seating at the Normandy Fountain related to city tables, and then also the process to allow restaurants to have more themselves.
Yeah, okay. If there's something we need to do to tweak our ordinance related to outdoor seating associated with restaurants, then let us know. Okay. So okay. We'll keep it here, and we'll bring it back in July, and you'll give us a report on those two things, and you guys will figure out who's going to take responsibility for what piece. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
Could I just add to the discussion? On Wednesday, the CRA's budget was approved by Miami-Dade County, and so now we are officially authorized to make certain expenditures, and so that's a huge milestone. This is the first budget that the county has approved for the CRA, and we also did receive 12 responses to...
I'm not hearing you on the last piece. What?
And we also did receive 12 responses to the 41st Street RFLI. An LTC was put out showing 10. Two were inadvertently left off of the list because those who submitted did not properly label or title their submittal. And so I just wanted to share that.
And so you've got 10 that are active, right?
We have 12 submittals.
12, but you said two of them you're taking...
Two of them were not initially identified because they were mislabeled by the firm submitting, and so there are 12 total.
Okay, 12. And then when are you going to be bringing that to us or to the commission for discussion? Or
we did not intend to bring it for discussion. We did issue an LTC, so at this point it's at the discretion of the commissioners as to what the next steps might be.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good. And how much did the county approve on the CRA budget?
The CRA's budget is about $1 million.
$1
million? Yes.
For the next fiscal year?
For the current fiscal year.
The year we're in right now?
Yes. So the way the county process works, the CRA board would approve, and that's the mayor and commission, would approve the budget, and then the county would have to essentially ratify the budget or approve it after the CRA board has approved. This process for the RDA typically takes maybe 6 months to occur, usually in February or March. The RDA budget was approved last month, and the CRA budget was approved this month.
So basically I have $1 million that I can spend before October 1st.
Well, those funds have already been budgeted. So through the budget development process for fiscal year 2023, the CRA board did identify priorities, and so we plan to implement the programs that have been identified on the upcoming City Commission agenda/CRA agenda for next week. There are two programs on the agenda that would be tied to the CRA's existing budget.
For the $1 million?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'll call you so we can discuss that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And can that money be carried over?
Can the money be carried over?
Portions of it, if it's not used?
Certainly, yes.
And so in about June of 24 is when we will learn what the budget is for that fiscal year, right?
Actually, when the assessments come in on July 1st for the city, the CRA and the RDA values will also come in, so we'll know what we're working with for fiscal year 24. We'll go through the budget development process. It's just that for the first year of the CRA technically is unable to spend any of its budgeted funds until the county approves. In future years, the CRA will be able to expend in advance of the county's approval, but up to the amount that was budgeted in the prior year. So because the prior year for the CRA had $0, zero budget, the CRA could not technically expend. What we have done was we used a little creativity in terms of the city enhancements. So for community policing, sanitation, code enforcement, we will likely do a journal entry or a transfer to cover some of the expenses that have been incurred on behalf of the CRA now that the county has approved the budget.
So if I understood you right, for the next fiscal year, we're working on the budget right now, which
yes.
will start October 1st.
Correct.
We can budget and expend up to $1 million, given that was the approval amount.
Correct.
And then I guess whatever difference we would learn maybe later in the year in June of 24?
Hopefully we can advance the county's process a bit next year, I think because the CRA is very new and it's the first time that they're reviewing its budget. Hopefully we can get that approval done in spring rather than summer.
And Jason, do you know if we are looking at, as part of our budget cycle, are you looking at making a proposal on how we would spend up to $1 million in fiscal year 24?
Yes, it runs concurrently, the budget processes.
Okay, good. All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate all your help. So, okay, we're 30 seconds away from our time certain, so I think we're close enough if that's okay with you. So we're going to call up item number... So 13 is a general category that I have on capital projects to review. We had previously, this committee looked at a proposal from Commissioner Fernandez regarding Lincoln Road, the closure of a couple of blocks there and improvements to the easternmost portion. That item was sent back to commission, and I see the signed resolution from the mayor on December 14th of 22 instructing the city to enter into negotiations with Toledo Beach Resort regarding certain items related to the improvement of that area. So we are at the point now where discussions have been had, and we are going to look at, I guess, a potential project. So with that, Commissioner Fernandez, I will let you kick it off.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for adding this item as part of this capital update. This is I think, a very exciting opportunity for the city of Miami Beach. I believe Lincoln Road is one of our gems that certainly we're working hard to elevate, to improve. And ever since before being elected as a resident, I've always taken great concern and great interest at the potential that we have at the east end of Lincoln Road. It certainly is an important part of our city, the heart of our city, what should be the red carpet entrance to our beaches. But what we've often encountered is depressed commercial activity, lack of pedestrianization, lack of cleanliness, an overabundance of homeless there, yet the opportunity for great potential, the opportunity to enhance the quality of life of the residents who live there, enhance the safety of those who do business there, and provide a much better welcome point to the visitors that come to Miami Beach. In September, I referred to committee the possibility of improvements to the 100 to 300 blocks of Lincoln Road to enhance the pedestrian and the vehicular experience, with a vision to revitalize the area. And at that time as well, the stakeholders, including the Ritz-Carlton and the Sagamore Hotel, came forward to propose a design and an engineer certain improvements to the pedestrianization and to the vehicular access, something that would really elevate the right of ways of Lincoln Road east of Washington Avenue and extending all the way into the beach walk. And our city staff have been working on that transformation. That is not just the pedestrian experience and the built environment of that area, but it's also the underground infrastructure needs, the replacement of existing stormwater systems, the improvements of the sanitary sewer system that no longer meets the requirements of our regulatory agencies, and the upgrading of our water mains. It really is not just an above ground improvement to the quality of life and the safety of our residents, but it's also a long term underground infrastructure improvements to sustain that area. And with that, I want to pass it along to our city administration and our city attorneys, who have been working hard on behalf of the public, of the public's interests, to enhance what is a beautiful gateway and what will truly, hopefully, be a true gem to be proud of in our city. With that, Madam City Attorney, you're recognized through the chair.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, You're not an attorney, but we'll make you one today.
I work with a really great attorney.
You work with a really good attorney.
She plays
one
on TV.
Right here, too. So all of them are good. So go ahead. You're recognized. Tell us what the status is. Like I said, you got direction on December 14th from the commission to have discussions and negotiations. So tell us where the city's at.
Good morning again, Commissioners. Raquel Williams, Assistant City Manager, not City Attorney. We have been working diligently with the developers to negotiate what you have before you today, which is a term sheet, which reflects several weeks of back and forth with trying to make sure that the city's interests are aligned with those of the private sector and to make sure that we're putting forward a project that has tremendous public benefit. As of today, we do have two pending Historic Preservation Board applications from the developer. I want to make clear that there is a private application which calls for a 15-story, 30-unit tower. There's also a single-story rooftop addition being requested. There's a lobby renovation, exterior renovation, including the pool deck. There is a reduction of hotel rooms from, I think, 477 to 423. And so that is the private application that is, in essence, being linked to.
That's not before us today, but what's before us today that was referred to this committee was not the private application, but Lincoln Road improvements.
I only mention that, Commissioner, because the developer has stated that the public-private collaboration to do the Lincoln Road improvements is contingent upon successful HPB application process. So if the developer does not obtain the approval of the HPB for that private project, then they would not be obligated to move forward with the public-private project for the Lincoln Road improvements. And so I just wanted to raise that. Both of those applications are slated to be heard at the September 12th HPB meeting, subject to the commission providing direction next week for the public-private project to move forward, as the city would have to sign off on that HPB application because we are the owners of the southern portion of Lincoln Road in the 100 block area. I do want to highlight the traffic impact studies. Based on the December resolution approved by the commission, the developer at its sole cost and expense was to prepare and submit to the city a traffic study for both the 100 block and for the 200 to 300 blocks. The developer did make good on that and did submit that to the city. It is going through the peer review process with our consultants as well as with our city team. The traffic studies are also being reviewed by Miami-Dade County's Department of Transportation and Public Works. Very recently, the developer, after receiving input from adjacent property owners, has modified their conceptual plan for the 200 to 300 blocks. I'm sorry, for the 100 block. So as you know,
just to be clear, the 100 yes. block is the block between Collins and the beach, right?
Correct. Correct. Okay. So in the 100 block, there are adjacent property owners who potentially raised concerns or provided feedback and input that caused the developer to modify their plan. As such, the developer would need to modify their traffic analysis and resubmit that to the city for peer review, for review by transportation staff, as well as the Department of Transportation and Public Works at the county. And so that is an outstanding item that's referenced in the memorandum.
So what's the item that really is in front of us now is just the 100 block, right? We're not the other block between Lincoln, between Washington and Collins, right?
It is essentially both, as the developer would be required to provide certain elements for the 200 to 300 blocks as well as for the 100 blocks. And so it is packaged together. The item was originally intended to transform that area of Lincoln Road that is not currently incorporated into the business improvement district area that has already been pedestrianized, to look at how we could extend from Washington Avenue all the way to the beach walk and make it a true pedestrian experience that is safe and also beautiful. So yes, there are requirements of the developer for the 200 to 300 blocks that they have already agreed to, and there are a few open items that we have yet to agree to as it relates to the entirety of the term sheet and the proposed long-form agreement. I can go through the key terms if you so
choose. So let me just make sure I understand. I'm looking at page 6 of 73 on the supplemental It says key terms improvement and maintenance agreement. Is that the term sheet that you're referencing?
Yes.
Okay. And it's got several pieces to it. It goes over until the top of page 10. And so this is related to the 100 block, right?
This is related to what we're calling the Phase 1 and Phase 2 projects. The Phase 1 project is for the 100 block. The Phase 2 project is for the 200 to 300 blocks. Okay. It incorporates both.
So do this for us because I know money's involved. So talk to us about the commitment, the city's financial commitment. What would that be?
Sure.
And have those terms been agreed upon? That's what I would like to hear about now.
Sure.
So tell us, focus on money since we are in our current budget cycle and we need to see what we need and how much we have. Go ahead.
Sure. So the project would have a cost of $12 million or up to $12 million, and the city would be required to provide a city contribution of either 50% of the value of the project or $4 million, whichever is lower, subject to annual increases based on the lower of CPI or 3%. And so the developer, they would also have to contribute, and their contribution could not be any less than the city's contribution. The developer has also proposed to engage at its sole cost and expense a lobbyist to go after state funds or other funds to supplement the project and, in essence, come up with the $4 million that would not be inclusive of the city's contribution or the developer's contribution. And so there is a request by the administration to have the $4 million appropriated no later than the conclusion of the fiscal year 2027 budget process. And we do expect that the developer, as they have already begun to have talks with their potential lobbyist, the expectation is that if the developer cannot secure through the lobbyist the funds by June of 2024, then the city and the developer would look at modifying or reducing the scope of the project to meet the aggregate amount of the city's contribution and the developer's contribution. So the project, if additional funds were not secured to get to $12 million, then we would look at a reduction in scope so that this could become an $8 million project or some reasonable number that both parties could accomplish together.
And, well, rather than ask you the question, I think the principal's representative is here. So let me just ask, Mr. Larkin, you represent the principal, right?
Correct.
Okay, so with respect to the comment about a state lobbyist looking for state funds, is that moving forward, and what is the timeline for that? Have you engaged someone to help you in Tallahassee on that? Or
so we have met with one of the best lobbyists up there, Nick Iarossi from Capital City Consulting, and we sat down with him at the Ritz, and we had a great meeting. He understands the scope of what needs to be done, and he has sent us a proposal, and we're just waiting on the culmination of events here between today and next Wednesday in order to go ahead with that proposal.
So they would like to move forward with pursuing state funds?
Correct.
But my experience has been, because I spent a little bit of time there, that there needs to be some matching locally. I don't think they're just going to give a check unless this. So is that how he's going to frame that?
Yeah, the way that he would present it would be a tripartite funding scheme where it's us as the private at $4 million, the city at $4 million, and then the state at $4 million.
Okay, so let me. This is your item. Commissioner, what is your dream?
Well, one of the items that I have on next Wednesday's agenda is a referral to the budget briefing to consider allocating $4 million of surplus dollars so that we have our matching dollars, so that Tallahassee does see, okay, here is a private stakeholder coming to the table to do these public improvements to the safety and to the quality of life of this area. The municipality is participating as well with its share, and now with a stakeholder coming forward and hiring Capital City Consulting, hopefully being able to secure that remaining piece of those $4 million, but showing to Tallahassee that we've got skin in the game, that we're putting forward our $4 million as well. And I have to say, it is exciting because while certainly there is a phase one and a phase two, and the phase one really does provide a major facelift to the redesign of the pedestrian paths east of Collins Avenue, installing a new arch that was designed and originally envisioned by Morris Lapidus, and enhancements to the green space there. There is also a phase two, but I almost see that phase two being very exciting because I think that there's parts of that phase two that may even happen, could potentially happen before the phase one, which is being able to pedestrianize with the county's approval that area from Washington Avenue and Collins Avenue. The way that we pedestrianized the promenade on Ocean Drive, we could very easily and very quickly, upon county approval, pedestrianize that part of Lincoln Road, which would, that in itself, be such a major transformation, not just for the residents and the quality of life of that area, but for the economic activity of that part of Lincoln Road. So my dream is to be able to see us move this forward once we've been able to identify $4 million to show to Tallahassee that the city of Miami Beach is putting skin in the game to improve an area that right now is not clean. We're lacking economic activity. There's too many homeless there, and it's not the safest condition right now for pedestrians. That's my dream here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Jason, do you have $4 million allocated as of now?
No, we're waiting for commission direction, and I believe, as the commissioner mentioned, I believe he has an item on the Wednesday commission meeting to get some direction from commission, and then obviously.
Did you bring $4 million with you today? So,
I brought Miracle-Gro for your money tree, Mr. Thank Chair.
You. So let me say this: you all know that I feel strongly that we all should have our priorities heard. You know, and I hear your passion, and it sounds like this is a priority with a capital P. So are you going to make a motion that we? Go ahead, Commissioner Earle. I know that you want to speak.
Yeah, so look, I think it's a great vision. Yeah. For it, not only beautiful and, you know, turns back the hands of time to another era, but it's also a safety issue and an economic revitalization of that area and potentially, you know, for even the rest of Lincoln Road. My question, Mr. Larkin, is he here? Let me ask you a question. With respect to, you know, recent legislation that, you know, gives power back to the commission to increase FAR, have you or your client looked at that as a potential funding source for something like this? You haven't made the request, but I'm asking you because we're gonna scramble to try to find money. And the question here is, if you were to proffer, you know, a request for additional FAR, which creates value, that would be a public benefit to maybe funding this gap.
No, there's no plans to do that, Commissioner. I mean, I'm not trying to be cute with you. Just that, based upon the aggregation of the Ritz-Carlton and the Sagamore, there's plenty of surplus floor area left over because neither of those properties are built out.
Okay. So the new tower that you're proposing, I know you have to get it approved. You already have enough FAR on the property for that.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Let me ask on the, because I heard somebody mention underground infrastructure. Is that part of the four, or do I need four plus? What is that, one? Or?
So 1 million of the four would be dedicated for the water and sewer infrastructure work being contemplated.
Okay. And is that part of this term sheet?
Yes.
So now, where is my public works, Mr. Gomez? maybe he knows, or maybe Jason, you know. Do I have $1 million in stormwater improvement that I can use for the that piece of it?
We would have to evaluate that, but I believe we have to look at what the split of that cost is.
That would be a different bucket of money.
Stormwater or the water and sewer. There, again, we have to get direction from commission, and we look at the different funding sources to see. I just see what you're saying is $3 million general fund,
yeah,
$1
million
split between those funds.
Maybe three plus one, right? So does anybody – I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot. If we don't know, we can research it, right? So go ahead.
Whereas the underground improvements may not have been anticipated to occur in the near future, with this project, it could be that the above-ground improvements would trigger the need for the underground improvements sooner rather than later. And so we had not identified that this project is an immediate priority for the underground, but if this project does move forward, we would need to incorporate it.
Yeah, I totally agree that you would want to do the underground if you're going to do this, because you don't want to have to go back and dig it up later. So, but we don't know if we have $1 million in.
Well, I can just tell you is those enterprise funds are, you know, user fee based. The water and sewer, which, you know, we'll talk about more next Thursday when we talk about the program. You know, we'll be needing to go out for bond issuance at the end of 24 or early 25 to continue with the multi-year capital program. So this would just be added on to that. And as you said, when something happens, you take advantage of that situation to have that opportunity. And on the stormwater, I believe the last we looked at our program, we weren't anticipating an issuance for another year or two. So, but again, I'd have to work with Public Works to see what that $1 million split would be between water and sewer and stormwater. I don't know if that's 50-50, but it'd be something. Once we get direction from the commission, I think we would then look at that.
So if we pursue this dream, and I don't say that in a flippant way at all, I like this project. We either are going to need to find an additional 3 plus 1 or cut something else, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I've been fertilizing the money tree. So, and I want to support this priority. And so if you want to make a motion to prioritize this and ask the commission to include the 3 plus 1 $4 million in the current budget cycle. I'll tell you why, because I can tell you, Mr. Larkin, your consultant in Tallahassee is not going to be successful if they cannot walk in and say the city has agreed to match the dollars or to put the money. So you would be wasting your money and time in Tallahassee if you can't show that there is participation at the local level.
And Commissioner, before you make motions, there's three items that the administration would like some guidance on. The first item is art in public places. The parties have agreed that 2% of the overall construction cost will go toward artwork. And the developer has proposed that a Morris Lapidus structure that is incorporated be counted as the artwork.
And I have to say, I think if it happened in parallel times that the administration, the attorneys, and the stakeholders were having these conversations. I agree. To me, that was one of the beautiful things about this, which was completing the vision of Morris Lapidus. To me, that is our work right there in and of itself, that we're getting the design. And I see Deborah Deslitz here, who knew Morris Lapidus himself, and I know how excited she probably is about this. I see two thumbs up. That we're actually completing that vision, that design that he had as part of his original renderings of Lincoln Road. So I would support and happy to incorporate that as part of our motion that the Morris Lapidus Arch be part of the AIPP obligation.
Yeah, I did the same thing when I did the funding for the 72nd Street. You know, I put the art in public places back in the project. So let's go ahead and get – what's the second item that's
the
open?
The second item, in order to maintain – the areas that the developer has agreed to maintain over time, they have requested two concessions, food and beverage concessions, in the public right-of-way between between the hotel and the beach walk. And their proposal contemplates that if the concession agreement is terminated, then their maintenance obligations would be terminated. Right now, what we envision is a concession agreement that would renew from year to year so that the city has the flexibility if for any reason the city needs to terminate. What they have proposed in return is that if the agreement is terminated, their maintenance obligations would go away.
The city would also share in the revenues from the concession stations, and that is an item to be negotiated further if we receive commission direction. But the open item aspect of the concession stations is really tying the concession agreement to their maintenance obligation, and the developer does not want to have the maintenance obligation if the concession agreement expires or is not renewed.
And is the maintenance agreement applicable to the public right-of-way or just their private property?
Combined. The city would undertake the maintenance of the roadway within limits, is what we've agreed to at this stage. And they would take care of the sidewalks, essentially, and the beach path or the beach pedestrian access to the beach walk.
Which would be something that if they didn't do, the city would be doing, right?
If they didn't do, the city would be doing.
Yeah, that would be the city's responsibility, right? So before we comment on that, what's the third item?
The third item is the term of the maintenance obligation. The city has proposed a 30-year term. The developer has proposed a 15-year term.
What would be so that ties into item number two.
They're related, so sure.
And is there the option that the city at any time could take over the maintenance of anything on the public right-of-way?
I'm sure that the developer would be happy for the city to take over the obligation.
Well, but in that case, then the concession thing would go away.
Of course.
Right. So let me hear from Mr. Larkin on that piece. So but for the agreement on the maintenance, the city would have to take care of anything on the right-of-way, including the street and the landscaping and cleaning the pathway to the beach walk, right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So when our sponsor, Commissioner Fernandez, originally approached us, and by the way, I haven't had a chance to thank you yet for your leadership here. It's been amazing. He said, you know,
we
really
have the money yet, so.
Was that premature? So he asked us to go ahead and immediately assume the maintenance responsibilities of the 100 block. That means from Collins, pedestrian path, all the way to the beach walk. And immediately, Peter Canovos, who's here sitting over to the right, suggested him, okay, that sounds like a good idea, but we need some type of revenue source to offset the maintenance cost. And we're happy to assume it, but we need a revenue source. So that's where the idea of the food and beverage stations came from. We originally proposed 5. That was a bit much for our sponsor to handle, so we negotiated back down to 2. But with 2, it's sufficient, but we absolutely need them in order to offset the cost of the maintenance.
Let me ask this question. We have a current concession agreement with a vendor on the beach. Would this potential concession agreement be in conflict with that existing agreement? I don't know if there's something in that agreement that says you can't have another concession within so many feet.
I don't believe that this would conflict based on its location, or proposed location.
Also, the developer can select a concessionaire, and so it may very well be that they would select one of the city's existing concessionaires.
Okay.
And actually, the idea of having some sort of concession there. Number one, I like because it enhances, in my opinion, the current vending, the current commercial activity happening there. We currently do have commercial vending activity there, and I get a lot of complaints about it. I know that surrounding residents are not happy with what's there, and I see it as an enhancement. Back, I think it was either 2019 or 2020 when it was the chair of the Police Citizens Relations Committee, which is where I initiated the discussions about this a number of years ago. 2020. Oh, there you go. She remembers. 2020. You know, it was one of the conversations we had. How do we bring positive activation in there to push away the bad activity that we don't like that's there now. And this was one of the ideas that the committee discussed and that I discussed with a number of the condominium associations in the surrounding area, and they all liked the idea of having this concession there just to push out the bad, bring in the good, and keep eyes and ears there, more importantly. Have activation there to occupy the space. So I see that as an enhancement of what we have there now. I also, I have to say, I'm in favor of a 15-year maintenance agreement, and I'll tell you why. All of our built environment has a useful lifespan. And sometimes when we talk about 30 years, 20 years, you know, we think just about maintaining. Well, there comes a point when government needs to come back to the table and say, we need to stop about talking about maintaining something, and now we need to talk about the new iteration, the facelift, the rebuilding, the re-improvement of an area. And I think certainly the residents and the taxpayers of that area deserve that after 15 years. Our city deserves it because that should be the red carpet entrance to the beach of our city. And I want us at the end of this 15 years not to be talking, okay, how do we try to add another year to this, another 2 years to this? No, that we talk about how do we re-envision this to continue providing the most beautiful entrance to the beach in our city. So I, in terms of that, I feel comfortable myself. I don't know.
Well, let me say to that, I'm okay with 15 years, but there needs to be part of the agreement is tied to the concession, right? So that if we are going to allow the concession to generate income to pay the maintenance, I'm happy for them to do the maintenance, which would otherwise be required by the city. But if we're going to say that after 15 years that conversation needs to be opened up again, then if the city takes over the maintenance, then there needs to be another conversation about those concessions and the revenue stream off of the concessions. Is that?
I do want to highlight that if the improvements are such that the materials used would cause the maintenance to cost more than the city would normally incur for the maintenance of asphalt or stamped concrete, you know, that would present an excessive cost for the city. We do also have some precedent in the Bulgari vacation, whereas the city did not contribute any dollars toward that project. And there is a
project?
The Bulgari Hotel.
Okay.
So in that agreement, which was also negotiated by the firm representing the Ritz and the Sagamore, the developer agreed to design, fund, install, maintain, and repair certain improvements within the public city beachwalk area, which would include lighting, landscaping, irrigation, pedestrian walkways, and the city didn't contribute anything, and that was a 30-year maintenance term. So I do want to highlight that 15 years may be on the lower end based on the types of improvements that I think we're going to see with this project, and we want to make sure that the city isn't put in a position where we have to maintain something beyond our normal scope and our normal maintenance costs.
I have a question.
Let me say to that point, I totally get the point. However, as Commissioner Fernandez said, we do want this to be a beautiful gateway, and that may mean that it's you know not going to be the typical that we would see. And so maybe what we need to do, rather than 15 years or 30, maybe say 20 years, and have a little bit more time on that. So are you okay with is no? Tell me why.
It's at 15. It's already deemed to be somewhat excessive by our lenders, and everything we do has to go through our lenders. So they have said they've drawn a hard line at 15 years, Mr. Chairman, and said we can't go any more than 15 years. I think 15 years is reasonable. I think with these other maintenance agreements that have a longer maintenance term, the scope of improvements is far less than what we're doing. What we're doing is a hybrid. We're redesigning, reconstructing an entire block from Collins all the way to the beach walk. Bear in mind that the other maintenance agreements with 1100 Lincoln Road, developer stepped in and they did the construction, but the city funded it, and the city's maintaining it. With regard to the Canopy Park, the city's maintaining it. The developer constructed it. With regard to Ocean Terrace, that developer ultimately will redesign and construct Ocean Terrace as a linear park, but the city's maintaining it. In the latter two instances, those developers obtained floor area as a part of that transaction. We're not asking for any floor area. So my point is that 15 years, I think, is a good number, especially that's the point in time when the improvements will need to be redone again, and I think 15 years is a fair number. We can't really go beyond.
So let me ask you this question, though, but you understand my prior comment that if it's 15 years and the city takes over maintenance, that there would be a reopening of the conversation on those concessions where the revenue stream is at, right? Because the whole reason you're getting the concession is to generate a revenue stream to pay the maintenance.
I totally agree with that, and we would be totally happy with not doing the concession stands anymore because we're doing it.
I just think we need to word it in a way that is general to say that you have to either that the city can pull the permit related to the concession after the 15-year, if that's going to be the period, or there's a renegotiation. As our assistant city manager said, there's a participation in the revenue stream, so maybe that participation changes.
Yes.
And you are allowed to continue operating, but you have to. There has to be a greater share to the city.
I think that's totally fair.
Commissioner Riola.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you think that it's fair. Yeah, because the way you're outlining it is the way I'm thinking about it. It seems like a win-win, right? So you get the revenue stream, you're maintained. Like, we want you to maintain it. You need money in order to fund it, okay? And 15 years, like for me, 15, let's say you're doing a good job or an okay job. 15 years, we have the ability to say, hey, look, the city's changed yet again. We want to do something else with that area, or we want a new, you know, concessionaire, or the city wants to take it over. And we reopen negotiations. And I think it gets to what you want to do, which is to you want a 30-year. The city wants 30 years. We could, at that time, just renew for another 15 or turn it over to somebody else. Yeah?
Are you proposing an automatic renewal? At 15
no,
years?
Well, we haven't crafted the language yet.
I don't want 30 years because I don't. Maybe we don't want it to look like that for 30 years, right? So, and as long as the principal understands that we're going to reopen the conversation on the revenue stream, mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. But I'm not going to let you keep the revenue stream if you're not doing the work.
I think that's fair, and, Mr. Chairman. We're totally in favor of that.
And the city could release that obligation prior to the 30 years and waive it. So if the commission at the time says that, you know, 15 years we'd like to do something different, that obligation could be released.
I'd rather have it at the 15 years because I know how the city is. It will just renew it. We'll do nothing. You know, we have this issue right now with Penrod's. I mean, it's exactly the same. That's 37 years into it. And until I raised it, that thing would have just rolled right over.
Yeah, and it'll in the end, it'll be 40 years.
Yeah.
40 years. Okay, so let me make sure I have – you had three items. The first was the art in public places. Mm-hmm. So I think there's agreement here that we want to include that back in the project. Same thing we did with 72nd Street, if you recall, right? So – and then the second item and the third item are tied together with this term, and I think you're hearing 15 years – but you need to have it's got to be tied with the revenue stream as well. So that's got to be worded. And then does that cover all three items? Or?
Yes. And just as a footnote, the concession agreement will require a bid waiver. I mean, that's not for this body to weigh in on, but that's just, as a reference point because, the idea is that the developer – and no other party would be able to do this because of the public benefit involved.
Is the concession going to be on the private property or on the right-of-way?
The city's preference was on the private property, but the developer has convinced us and the sponsor is supportive of doing it on the right-of-way.
And I have a question. The current concessions that are out there, are those on the public property or on the...
Yeah, they're on the beach.
They're on the actual sand. Yeah. I don't think we have any concessions on the beach.
We have vendors on the beach walk.
We do have some vendors.
Those are permits for under a vendor program that is limited in time, they're not treated as concessions. This would be a concession agreement that would provide them with the exclusive right to this area for the 15-year term.
But those vendors currently operate on the public property.
They do. Yeah. Yes.
And that's where I think that this concession is going to be. It's going to enhance the vendor activity that we have going on there. Then I've received. I know whenever I speak with individuals from the surrounding condos, I get complaints about.
And will that require construction on the right of way?
Well, there will be some improvements made in that area. There's still not 100% clarity as to where the new concession agreements will go, because we didn't bring today an item relating to an in the meantime concession agreement so that maintenance could start immediately. That will be heard at the July commission meeting. I imagine that we will have to figure out where the appropriate placement is in consultation with. You look confused, Commissioner?
No, but those are temporary stations that are being placed, or they're stations that can be easily moved and removed and placed at the beginning of the day or end of the day.
That is the intent, yes.
Okay, so it's not like something that's being built permanently there. It's something that can be
placed
there
and
stored.
Yes.
And stored.
They'll be stored in the Ritz-Carlton garage every night.
Okay, so you're going to make a motion to have a favorable recommendation on funding in the next fiscal year budget with the changes, right? So if you do that, I think Commissioner Iola will second that, and I will fully support it. Happy to support your priority. And
thank you.
Now, the easy part was done today. I guess I have a week to find $4 million. This always happens to me, like, the chair will find the money, right? So, Jason...
If I can, to clarify everything in the one. So there is a recommendation to move this to commission with a favorable recommendation that the Morris Lapidus Arch is considered the art in public places obligation for the maintenance agreement to be at 15 years, linked to the concession agreement as presented, and for a recommendation from this body to allocate $4 million in the 2024 budget, of which $3 million will be from the general fund and $1 million from the applicable stormwater and water and sewer funds.
Yes, so when you say to the commission, I want this brought to the budget meeting next week.
If again, I believe, Commissioner Fernandez, you have an item that is on commission, which is first to refer to the very next day's budget. Briefing, which is on capital.
Yeah. We can refer it here as well.
Yeah.
So we'll show, because I want to have this conversation with the full body at the next budget, because I have to either, the body's going to either have to cut $3 million somewhere else or find $3 million.
There's some. I'll just say there are some opportunities that if the direction at FERC.
Exactly, and I've been fertilizing the money tree, and I already have some ideas on where we can find that. So, I'm going to keep you all in suspense for another week.
Mr. Chair, we have one more point of clarification.
Yeah, sure.
In the event that the city has to terminate the concession agreement due to a breach by the developer, for example, they're not keeping the area clean or what have you, the city administration believes that their obligation to maintain should continue, notwithstanding, because it otherwise puts us into a situation where, you know, they could potentially default on purpose to no longer have the maintenance obligation. So we wanted to mention that our intention is to add that in the next iteration.
That's going to be an interesting. Let me hear from Mr. Larkin. So, Mr. Larkin, how do I prevent your client from intentionally defaulting to get out of the maintenance obligation?
Well, first, they would not. It's in their best interest. It's in the public's best interest to make this 100 block of Lincoln Road shine. Even right now, without the benefit of any agreement being in place, they're already out there pressure washing the sidewalks. Today, they're putting new landscaping in. our clients have acted in absolute good faith. So the risk of them trying to be nefarious about this and trying to intentionally create a breach of the concession agreement is far-fetched.
I know, but the breach may be unintentional, by the way.
Yeah, so, or you could sell the client, you could sell the project, and we're dealing with the next owner.
Yeah, so, I mean, a termination for default clause is standard in every contract agreement. So, and I don't think your client would intentionally default, but as the attorney said, you could sell the property, right? And then, so anyway, you guys have to work that out. Figure out what – figure it out, okay? Right. Figure it out. I'm not – I'm just saying a T for D clause is standard in a contract. I don't think your existing client would intentionally default, but the city needs to be protected in some way. So it's not one way or the other. You guys figure it out.
Okay.
Okay?
And, Mr. Chair, before we end, I just want to thank the many members of the public, the many residents of the city who have emailed in support – of this, and I see members of the public here as well, and residents from the Decoplage and other condos as well. And just thank you for supporting this. And we've been talking about it for many years, and to the stakeholders of the Ritz-Carlton and to the Sagamore as well. I think it'll be a great partnership. And Raquel and Rick, thank you for continuing to work in this, always in the best interest for the taxpayers and residents of the city.
Thank you so much.
I'm short on time. That's why I'm not taking public comment. We don't normally take public comment in committee, but I can ask it by a show of hands. Is anyone here supporting this item? And by a show of hands, is anyone here opposed to the item? Okay, we've got one versus about maybe 15 or so. Anyway, so
I do appreciate the policy recommendations. We will continue to show these items as open as we go to the commission and just make sure that the recommendation of the Finance Committee is highlighted.
That's fine. Is there anything else you need from us?
No, sir.
Okay. Now all I got to do is find some money, right?
We can make it happen, yeah.
We'll make it happen. We'll make it happen. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay.
Commission,
that item will now...
We're closed on that item.
We're closed on that item, and we will take it up again at the budget workshop next week. And then we'll hear it again as part of the final budget. Okay? Thank you all for coming. And so I want to call up item 7 and 8 on the ferry. We've already moved this to commission. I think it's going to be heard at the meeting next week, the commission meeting. But we had a couple of open items, and then I've got some updates as well. So this was to Commissioner Minor had an item, and I've got an item I've been working on to provide a government a subsidy up to $600,000. So my update is I have been talking, as you all know, I sit on the TPO, and so I've been talking to the TPO. There are some funding opportunities, Jose, that they've identified, and I think that we'd ask you all to look at some funding opportunities as well. So I know previously, since when it was privately run, some of the grants are not available to other than a government entity. So, but what I think we left it open that you were going to come back and talk about some grant opportunities as well, right? Or no?
I'd be happy to, Commissioner. At last month's meeting, there was a detailed conversation about different grant opportunities that we're aware of. I welcome a conversation with TPO Executive Director Eileen Boucle to see if there's potentially something else out there that we can apply for. I do recall when we discussed this last month, there are always issues with the timing of grants. There was one that the door closed on, the window closed on it about a couple months ago, so we're going to have to wait till next year to apply for that one. There are grants that are geared to capital for capital funding,
yeah.
For example, to purchase vessels or to construct docks. There are others that are geared to operating, and so we're looking at both. I will note that there are two items going to next Wednesday's commission meeting. One accepts the recommendation of this committee last month, and that motion focused on a pilot project with Poseidon and looking at what that operation would look like in terms of where it would operate from, what dock, and that sort of thing. There was also a referral to two committees, and we're already on the agenda for the Marine and Waterfront Protection Authority. And Poseidon will be presenting their plan as well. And then there's another item going on next Wednesday's City Commission meeting that accepts the recommendation of the Public Safety Neighborhoods Quality of Life Committee. And that one, that motion asked us to pursue different grant opportunities at the federal and state level and explore different components of a water ferry program to issue a competitive solicitation for the service. So that's more for the long-term permanent service. So we're working on both fronts, on a short-term as well as long-term, pursuing grants. I'll have that conversation with Executive Director Eileen Bouclet.
Yeah, so, and right now, Jason, I think we have a $600,000 placeholder in the budget, right?
There is an enhancement request for $600,000 for the ferry service. Yeah. That's correct.
So, yeah, and my idea was to always have a competitive procurement down the road, but I don't want to wait another 6 months or a year to start this pilot. So that's why the body agreed, I think, to start it October 1st. Whether it's a year or 18 months down the road to have it. But what I would like you to do is, I've already talked to the executive director of the TPO. I'm probably going to bring an item in July because I've had them researching potential funding opportunities. So I need you to call her and figure out what we need to do as a city, because of the $600,000, based on a conversation I had with her 2 days ago, there may be an opportunity for us to recover $300,000. I have also started having a conversation with the city of Miami about potentially participating a little bit in this as well. But to the extent that they don't, I don't want this to fall apart. So, but Eileen told me that she thought there were some funds that we could immediately apply for. And it may be that we would have to get the county involved in terms of, applying in the name of the county. But if you would have that conversation, is that okay with you guys? Yes.
Yeah.
So I want you to start having a conversation with her immediately to see what applications, because I'm probably going to put an item on a TPO's agenda in July to bring this. If I need the TPO board to do an urging to submit a grant application or to support a grant application. Okay?
Okay.
And in the meantime, I guess we'll talk about their $600,000
potentially
there. I mean, I understand it's got to be approved by the commission, but that's what we're looking at.
So just to summarize these two items that I think we're going to close them out here, is the direction is for the administration, transportation, and grants to meet with the TPO to have that discussion on potential grant opportunities to get this moving.
Okay. Yeah, and then, Jose, maybe you could just keep me informed, because I don't know that we're going to have another meeting here before my TPO, and I'm going to go ahead and put an item on the TPO if Eileen tells me that's what I need to do. So try to have the conversation sooner rather than later with her so that I'm ready to put an item on the TPO's agenda in July if I need to. Okay?
Understood.
And then just keep me informed. All right? Okay. With that, we're going to show these closed.
Thank you.
You like it when I say we're closing it, right? Because
we're just working together as a team.
Yeah, exactly. okay. Commissioner Areola, I know you had several items on the new, and I want you to let me know which, because we may or may not get to everything. So tell me which ones. Let's get a couple of these.
Can I ask for just one that should be very, very quick? Is item 15, I believe, okay. For housing, was a request.
Yeah, that one will be quick. Let's call that one quickly so we can get staff back to work.
Item 15.
Where is our housing? I think that's a housing. Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I think you need us just to let you reallocate some funds, right? Or tell us what you want.
That's correct. The city has an ongoing partnership with Camilla's House, as we work very closely with them as we contract their services for shelter beds and the Lazarus program. The Lazarus program focuses on street outreach for the mentally ill. And so what, in essence, we're trying to do is reallocate our dollars for the Lazarus program to Camilla's health concern to hopefully be able to augment the services that we provide. The team will include an advanced registered nurse practitioner and a medical assistant. They will provide on-site psychiatric care as well as wound care, medication management, and so they will also be providing an in-kind of $60,171 to ensure the project. This pilot program would be in addition to the funded Lazarus program that, unfortunately, due to staffing issues, could not take the allocation of fiscal year 22-23. And so we have with us Mr. Francis. He is the CEO of Camilla's Health Concern, in case there are any questions. I think he's in the restroom.
Okay. You guys okay with this?
Yeah.
You going to make a motion?
I'll move.
All right. I'll second it. Commissioner Areola, you're okay?
Yep.
It's done.
Thank you.
Does this need to go to the commission?
I believe so, for reallocation, just because. Yep.
So we'll show us a favorable recommendation of the FERC to commission as presented.
Yep. Can we get this on the agenda next week? Do you need it by then? Or?
I think we'll be okay for July.
Okay, fine. All right, so let's get it
Thank
on
you.
The July agenda. Okay, that one's done. Commissioner Areola, you've got some items. Which?
Sorry. Let me take the easy ones first. Yeah. Can we call up item number 18?
Item 18, let's call that up.
Discussed funding the Police Athletic League proposed STEAM program. Happy to tee it up. Bobby, you want to come up? There's a, I believe, $10,000 request fund, I guess, what we're calling a junior scientist. Is that the case? You want to tee this up, Bobby?
It's about 13 children are in it, between 3 and 4. They meet on Saturdays, and they go through science, everything that's out there for the community.
Okay, so you want to make a recommendation that this be included in the next budget cycle?
Yeah.
Are you moving that?
Yeah, I'll move
it. I'll second it. Show that done. So we'll take this up at the budget.
For the, yeah, the, this will be an operating expense, so it'll be part of the July 21st operating budget.
Okay. All right, item 18. That's closed now.
Similarly, let me do 17.
Okay, so item 17.
I don't recall off the top of my head what the cost of this was. Jason, help me out. But this is to discuss funding to screen the pump station at 51st Street and Pine Tree Drive. Requests came in from neighbors in that area. I guess, you know, some promises or assurances or comments have been made in the past that we would do this. I guess it hasn't been done yet. And so neighbors have been asking, you know, when and how are we going to do this? So I promise I'd bring this up to find out, you know, what the funding need is and find a funding source for it.
Do we know what the good morning again, Joe. Do we know what the funding need is on this?
No, commissioners, but I did want to point out that in May of 2022, we did do a landscaping project around the 51st Street pump station. We provided a couple of photos in the memo to show that the vegetation is really taking hold. We looked at the site again. I had the team go out again to see if there were other opportunities. That site is pretty maxed out. The pavement areas, we really need access to the pump station. So if at this point, I think we've maxed out the area in terms of pump, of landscaping. In fact, the landscaping buffers the fence that was put around the facility. If it's the will of the body that want us to look at a completely new landscaping project, then we can do that. But that obviously we would have to determine what that cost would be.
If I
so
can.
That's not... Lance, this is a screen, right? Is that sort of like what was done on in Sunset?
Harbor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Joe, what's your thought on screening?
We can certainly take a look at it. It's a smaller pump station, so we're going to have to be really careful about it as far as screening, but we can certainly look at it.
Where is it's in the middle of the...
Yeah, it's in a triangular kind of area, Commissioner.
Do we have any idea what this could cost, Jason?
No on that, but on page 243, there is some pictures so you can see what it looks like now.
Okay.
And I think the administration did react to comments about that and did do a landscaping project. And the recommendation that is listed in the memo here is to allow the landscaping to continue to grow out.
Right.
And to basically build that natural, more of a natural landscape screen around the aesthetic fence that's put in there. So perhaps this be an item to come back in a couple months for additional growth, but that's the recommendation instead of necessarily expending, I would assume, several tens of thousands on a metal screen.
When's our next FERC meeting? Do we know?
It's the 21st.
The next actual real FERC
meeting
will potentially be July 28th, assuming that is not ended up being needed as the third budget meeting. So it theoretically should be July 28th.
Okay. So, Commissioner Ariola,
go ahead. Just a question for Joe. I mean, I'm looking at this photo. I haven't been there. I haven't looked at it. Maybe it's been 2 months, so I don't know what the condition is now. But, clearly if the vegetation grows more fully, you know, that might solve the problem.
Right.
And typically down here, I mean, it grows fairly fast. But, you know, I don't know if you're the person to answer the question, but, you know, will it get there? Will the vegetation get to a place where the canopy, you know, really does enclose it and it's, you know, hidden from view? If not, is there other vegetation we can plant that will grow higher, you know, some really nice high hedges and just cover the thing?
As I understand from my green space team, the vegetation that was selected for them, and because they picked out this vegetation, was to, oh, there we go.
Here we go. Come on up.
That's Rodney. I don't want to be a landscape architect today, Rodney. Go ahead.
So what do we got, Rodney?
Good morning. Rodney Knowles, Assistant Director for Public Works. The landscaping that's there is all native material, which will grow in and completely screen the station as it is. If there's a desire for something to get a bit taller, the only other option I would recommend is probably podocarpus, which we can get to grow significantly taller, not quite in tree form, but we'll be able to trim it so it stays a bit narrow. But what's there right now is a few stoppers and native material that will knit in real nicely and keep that screen going.
So I'm looking on page 243 on the left side. There's this white fence, but there's no vegetation there.
That's to allow access into the pump station, Commissioner. So that area we really can't landscape because we've got to be able to go in and maintain the pump station.
Okay.
In areas where there's no vegetation, it's either, like Joe said, for access, or there are utility complications there, like maybe 6 inches of soil cover, so we can't really excavate to plant material in, or there's concrete or asphalt.
And one thing we could do is on that side where you can't do vegetation is we could do a much more attractive screen maybe that would open and close. So let's do this. I want to go look at this as well, but
okay.
Let's...
Yeah, the neighbors approached me. They, you know, concerned us. I'd look into it. Maybe this is not a big expense. Maybe it's not even a budget item.
Right.
I brought it here so we would talk about it. But Rodney or Joe, you know, if let's solve this issue. Whether we throw some more plants in there that'll solve it, and then maybe a really pretty, you know, green screen like you have a tennis court
screening.
Or something,
okay.
Low cost, and let's see if that handles it.
We can look at that.
You know, just to you know, satisfy the neighbors. That were on top of this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You see on the backside, there's no vegetation, but we could replace that
It's a nice neighborhood, and it looks like an afterthought. Let's just take care of it, guys.
And I see, like, the one on 34th and Chase near my home, I've seen over the years the foliage you guys have planted there have covered it well over the past
over time,
3 or 4 years.
Exactly.
You know,
let's do this, Jason. Let's move this to the budget workshop because we may need $100,000 to do some screen. So I just want to put it there if we need to bring it up. In the meantime, you guys
– I'm hoping we can do this for like less than 1,000.
Yeah, if I may ask, yeah. Perhaps the direction is for Public Works really to look into enhancing the level of landscaping that's there.
Why don't we keep this here, bring it back in September.
Okay.
And hopefully you come back in September with some pretty better pictures that this has been taken care of.
And, we'll and if we need you guys, any money, we can...
And if you need money, let us know, but I'm hoping it's a couple thousand bucks.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll show this retaining.
I don't think we could do anything for a couple of thousand dollars. But
well, I mean,
but,
the trees and some pretty screens, I think we can. But if we're wrong,
all right, so
let
we'll
us know right
it back
away.
In September, this item, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's take a look at it.
Thank you.
All right. All right. I want to get to a couple of other items that to open up. Item number 9, if you recall, we had a conversation last month about a roll-off being a roll-off being a roll-off. That's going to be heard in the commission. But we also kept it here because we want to look at whether or not we want to change the ordinance. And I don't know if, Mr. Gomez, you guys have had a chance to look at this. I looked at a couple of photographs. I feel strongly that a roll-off is a roll-off is a roll-off. And we don't want to start requiring permits if somebody's picking up an old sofa and putting it in the back of their pickup truck or something like that. But have you guys started thinking about whether or not we need to update the ordinance in any way going forward?
Well, I think, Commissioner, there were recommendations made that we've included in the memo here to add additional definition and language as to what a roll-off is. So I think... based on my reading, it clearly it's defined collection and disposal of construction debris, demolition debris, or large quantities of trash or bulky waste, but not garbage or commercial refuse. So I think it does define well what a roll-off container is.
But what this proposed ordinance would do, Commissioner, just to flag this, is not consistent with what you just said. Because what this would do would treat everybody subject to the same rules that would apply for the traditional roll-offs.
I'm not going to support that. So, because I don't think – can you imagine if you're a homeowner and you get somebody to come by in their pickup truck and pick up an old sofa, right? And then, no. So let me do this. I think I need to do more work on this. It's my item, so I'm going to open it and continue it till next month. So in the meantime, Joe, I'll come and talk to you,
yes, sir.
Brad, and we'll figure out where we need to go. I need to clearly...
So we'll show it deferred till July?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. That's item number 9. Commissioner Fernandez, you had item 10. What is... You want to take that one, and let's... I think this is also Public Works.
Yes. Yeah, just a general update. We got an update at the Public Safety and Neighborhoods Quality of Life Committee. I forgot that we had this item here as well. But just a general update. Where are we on the status of the easement and the right-of-way behind Club Atlantis?
Yes, as I reported in the Land Use Commissioner, we've determined, at least our position is that the right-of-way behind Club Atlantis is Club Atlantis. Steve Rothstein, our deputy city attorney, has been working very closely with us and with Club Atlantis. He's already reached out to the Club Atlantis. I think they're setting up a meeting to go over the particulars and how we go to the next step to transfer either through an easement or through a quitclaim deed.
I believe part of the reason why I placed this item here on the agenda is once we figure out the city's access to that portion of Miami Beach Drive, while there's physically it's unobstructed and there's access, but it's just a legal matter that the city doesn't own it. And I believe the reason why we have it here is because we want to be addressing then long-term flooding solution, infrastructure improvements, and also a long-term vision for the revitalization of Miami Beach Drive from 24th Street to 29th Street. That, of course, requires capital planning and putting it into our capital budget for long-term vision. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, sir. So, again, as you mentioned, once we're able to resolve the right-of-way issue, then the next step would be to to two things: develop a, like a, as you said, a holistic master plan, if you will, a vision for Miami Beach Drive from 24th to 29th, and address some of the infrastructure needs. For example, in, we know that behind Club Atlantis, there's an issue with storm drainage that there's not almost non-existent, so they have a continuous flooding in that area. So to address those issues and others along the way.
Okay. So once we get the whole ownership issue addressed, an easement and access issue, what do you need in order to start looking at the holistic vision? I mean, this goes behind many condos. We have thousands and thousands of residents that live there, you know, between Club Atlantis, between Trident Towers, between the Riviera, between some of the other condos there. And then you have two big economic generators for us anchoring it, the addition and the one hotel. So how do we, once we have the easement addressed, start looking at this holistic long-term vision?
Which the easement is the mechanics, but I think what we need is to, and maybe the committee could entertain a motion to give us direction for support for the city to undertake the improvements along Miami Beach Drive in this area, subject to entering into the appropriate easements with the property owner, Club Atlantis.
Right, and one thing is the short-term improvement to seek relief from any possible liability because uneven surfaces and flooding and that type of stuff. But the other one is a long-term vision for it. Because I'll tell you, I think probably not much has been done to that area probably since the 80s, it looks like, since the time when a lot of the developers went in there, built some of these buildings, and maybe made some improvements to Miami Beach Drive. But since then, I don't think there really has been any significant public investment other than regular maintenance, right. But there really hasn't been any significant public investment that the residents of that area deserve in the enhancement of that there. So I'd like for us to start, you know, engaging in this process, especially with MBNA. I know MBNA has their own vision,
yes,
of what that should be. So how do we start in those conversations?
Well, you could keep it in committee and have staff come back and report on what that project would look like, or you could move it out of committee with support for a project that would include this particular area that would require the easement from Club Atlantis.
Okay, so I think number one, you know, continuing to support the easement, us legal getting the legal instrument for the easement. Number two, the short term improvements for the flooding and that type of stuff. But then I think the most important thing is long term path.
Identifying a long term project to look at the whole vision and work with MBNA on developing a vision for.
Right.
Miami Beach Drive.
Do you need commission action for
that? I think just a recommendation from this committee that for us to move forward, and then we'll identify a project, and that will obviously require at some point bringing it back through the budgetary process to identify.
Yeah, because you're going to need funding.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you
for
want
a long-term project.
Do you want to move that then to instruct them to research and then bring it back in terms of a recommendation?
Yes, I'll make that motion. And I see David Martinez is here, and I'm sure this probably involves David as well.
Yes.
Okay. So, Commissioner Arreola, are you okay with that? So, all right, we'll show that unanimous. When do you think you could come back? You're going to need some time to look at this.
We need some time.
September.
September.
So, if I mean,
this may not be something for long term that we can fund this cycle. It may be that
correct.
It needs to get funded in the next cycle.
By the time the right-of-way issues are cleared up.
Okay, let's bring it back in September.
But so we need to start doing those studies. You know, you guys start to do your visioning and your cost estimates and all that type of stuff so that with them we can start working it into a budget, a future budget.
If I may, it sounds like there may be two particular directions here. One is the return in September for the administration to develop basically a CIP for this area of Miami Beach Drive. And then there was also talk about for the city attorney's office to begin work on obtaining an easement. Is that correct?
That we're doing that. We're working
yes.
with the.
Okay, so that doesn't.
That's
so
already in the works.
So we don't need direct. We don't need direction as we go to commission.
No, we're
that's
already
happening.
Doing
okay.
How
yeah.
far away are we from having that easement? It seems like it should be pretty easy.
I believe that Steve was having a conversation with members of the association for them to give us guidance on in terms of what their approval requirements would be. You know, if a quick claim could require, you know, the approval of the entire membership potentially, right. depending on the bylaws, you know, and the governing documents of the condo. So he was having that conversation, but we could draft an easement providing us with the ability to perform improvements very quickly.
Okay, and just for the record, this conversation was initiated precisely specifically by. Club Atlantis, by the residents of Club Atlantis.
Correct.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, you got what you need, Jason, right?
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
Commissioner Ioli, you have item 11, this cost of living adjustment. Who here from staff is going to be, this is for a stipend incentive for first responders?
Yeah, I can tee it up. This is basically, this is something we had approved, not sure when, a while back,
right.
$250 a month in housing stipend. The issue becomes is it's taxable, and so we want to basically gross it up so that the 250 is net.
So it's like considered additional income?
Yeah. Did I summarize it?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Marla Alpizar, the City of Miami Beach Human Resources Department. We are ready to move forward with you if you desire to do a suggested increase to the housing allowance for first responders and as well code enforcement. You can see different in the item, you can see different amounts that certain increases, COLA increases would generate. So what is the desire of the commission? Please note that whatever is agreed to at this point for a COLA increase, we as a city would need to approach the bargaining units and renegotiate.
Let me ask, is there any way for us to provide this stipend where it would not be taxable, or
no,
this is just covered
not,
under federal tax law that it's taxable income?
Correct.
Okay. So I don't have any issue with
grossing it up.
I mean, I don't know that we need to be so scientific about it. Maybe we just need to pick a number and say 300 instead of 250. I don't. Do we know what the number would be, Marla?
Yes. If you look at the second chart, the very last row gives a 30% tax rate with, so you can kind of see a rough estimate of
so
what would be the gross.
Oh, 325, or is that right?
The commissioner is seeking a net of commissioner, you said 225.
No, sorry. We're looking at. That chart, 30% increase. Oh, it was a 30% increase, but we're saying if it's a 30% tax bracket,
yes.
then what does the gross have to be? I mean,
so what number are you trying to achieve? 220?
The 250, yeah.
Yeah, the net of 250.
So we would need to go higher than 325 because the net of a 30% rate would be 227.
Okay. So then, Jason, do you have it or no?
So in that scenario, you're assuming that people are in a 30% tax bracket because it really would vary depending on
people's
tax brackets.
It's an assumption. People are above and below that.
Well, yeah, we just got to pick a number. So we don't have to calculate every single person's. We round it to 30%. It's probably actually less, right, once you do all the deductions and credits. But using a 30% tax bracket to net 250.
The question I would have then would just be the budgetary impact of that. Something that have to go as a budget enhancement, I would think, because that's not funded at the current rate.
If it's 30%, 360 times 0.7 is 252. So $360 would get you 360 netted, taking 30% out, to get you 252. Are you okay with that, Commissioner?
Yeah,
I'm okay with that as well. So assuming a 30% bracket, then you've got 360, and 70% of that is 252. So,
yeah. So within the current allocation, because the pilot project has not, there are people who have recently added to the plan, but because the funding is not fully being utilized, I don't believe that this will cause a budgetary impact. I think
because
that it will
not
be within.
We set aside a certain amount of money, right?
Yes, for the 3-year pilot, you set aside a total for the 3 years of.
So you're saying you don't think we need to add any money to the pot because not all the money is being used right now.
That is my.
You just need a recommendation. Estimate. It sounds like it's been moved by Commissioner Arreola, and I'll second it. And I think Commissioner Fernandez is okay that we would make a favorable recommendation to increase the stipend for a gross of $360 a month. That would be our recommendation. Do you need to take that, Jason, back to the commission? Because that was part of
I believe it would have to go to commission because we have a favorable recommendation to move the $360 per month and then for the administration then begin to reopen. Collective bargaining, or is it going to be part, or is this a recommendation to be added? Because I believe the administration will be beginning in the next several months to open up bargaining for the next contract. So I guess the question would be, is this something for us to add in for the new contract we're getting ready to negotiate, or to do this immediately? If you can.
To the chair, I don't think that if we approach this through bargaining, whether it's bargaining as an MOU under the existing contract or part of what we're going to propose in our upcoming bargaining, I don't think that it would need to necessarily go back to commission because this is a bargained item, and I believe that you're within the current funding. So I don't know that you would need to go back to commission.
I'm sorry. If there was a recommendation from FERC for this to be included in the next contract,
correct.
Administration would just take this into account that this would be one of the kind of the chips on the administration give.
Correct.
Then it would be in that case, it would be approved when the commission
approves
the next part. When is the next budget, the bargaining cycle?
So this, we're about to enter into the third year of the 3-year contracts.
Yeah.
And so, we would be looking at in the next budget year commencing bargaining so that we would be bargaining to hopefully achieve a contract before the current one expires.
But that would mean that this increase wouldn't take effect until, what, October of 24?
Correct. So if you want us to approach the bargaining units now, we could and discuss if this is something they're willing to accept as a benefits change. And if we did that, then we would enter into an MOU with those bargaining units.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Why wouldn't they accept
this? I think we should do it now, immediately. And then I can't imagine they would not want additional benefit, right? And then you would need to amend the bargaining, and you would probably have to bring that to the commission. Then you
no,
wouldn't.
We don't normally.
Okay.
But this recommendation for the for this enhancement should go to commission for the whole commission to endorse the administration's actions.
So, if the city attorney thinks that
this was approved by resolution initially, so we would just amend the existing resolution
The number. That we would just need to amend the resolution because that resolution had 250 in it.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so let's bring an item in July to amend
to
that resolution and update it, and then hopefully we can move this forward immediately.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, I mean, so the 362, it turns out to be $4,344 a year for a housing stipend. That's pretty good. Just for living in Miami Beach.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. All right, let's that's closed. So let's see. Commissioner Arreola, let's take up. You had some other items.
Your pleasure. Which ones you want?
22, the trolley. We've been talking about this a lot. So,
okay.
And I think it could potentially affect. I know there have been some talk about increasing the time, but in our current budget cycle, we're keeping, I think, the 20 minute. But who's going to look at trolley ridership auditing technologies?
Yeah. Let me tee it up a little bit.
Yeah,
and Mr. Centurino couldn't be here today. He sent me a note, RIG. He's been working on this. And so I think he's going to provide a memo and a presentation to us hopefully shortly. But, you know, I've had conversations with him, and he's, you know, given me some insight. It's been educational for sure. I think we'll all enjoy hearing what he has to say. But, you know, the way we calculate ridership is to say it's unscientific would be generous. And, you know, part of it is using technologies, including, you know, video cameras. And lo and behold, sometimes those video cameras don't even work. And so it's not very scientific. So the thing I'd like to explore is, you know, having better technologies so that when people are getting on and off, we can keep track of actual ridership so we can know with better certainty what a ridership really is and not sort of this, you know, loosey-goosey calculation that we've been doing.
I have a question. I know I remember when I worked at the county, one of the things the county loved was to tout the success of the People Mover because it's free. There it always has high ridership, and of course in a high-density area. But they calculated the ridership never by the security cameras. It was sensors at the doors entering and exiting, and that's how they kept the census of the people in on that. Jose, to the vice mayor's point, can't we use technology like that for this?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
We're using some technology now.
We do. We have automatic passenger counters. We've been using them since the onset of the trolley program. We have currently we're utilizing a couple different technologies. They're automated. They're automatic. The devices count the number of passengers boarding and alighting, there has been, or at least the OIG report showed, that there's some discrepancy in the numbers based on their inspections. I don't want to speak for the OIG. It was a limited inspection, and what we saw was that some of the counts were under, some of the counts were over. In if we look at basically just the sample that the OIG conducted, I think we're actually under reporting numbers. But nevertheless, whether it's under or whether it's over, it's...
Well, let's hear from the IG. We got some representatives from the IG here, right? So come on up.
Yeah, and then I'd just like to hear from Jose what technology we actually use and what the...
Go ahead, Jose.
How do we calculate ridership? I mean, if I wanted to say, you know, bus number 12 today, Friday, how many people were on it, could you give me that answer?
Yes.
For sure?
Yes.
And what's the technology?
We're currently using two types of technologies. On the low floor trolleys, we're using sensors that are located above the doorways, and I'm going to also defer to Misha here, our transportation.
So when people
manager,
get on, but it counts them.
Correct. And then on the low floor trolleys, we're using more of a technology that has a horizontal beam, two beams actually, so that if you know it counts people going in and people coming out. Those are the two technologies that we're currently using. I want to say they're. Is it Gila?
Gila.
Yep. Gila is.
Can you tell us who you are? Introduce yourself.
Yep. Mikhail Rebov, transportation manager, oversee the transit.
Thank you. So there are two technologies on each trolley?
No, we do have two different types of hardware. On the high floor, it's the door beams, and on the low floor, it's overhead cameras.
But they're...
Either one.
Either one. So it's not... It's like... We can't use two different sources on...
That's correct.
I got it. Okay. So let's hear from the IG. You did an audit, sir. Tell us who you are first.
Mark Coolidge, chief auditor.
Yeah.
And, yes, we've done an audit. The draft report was sent out 3 weeks ago. Right now we're just waiting on responses from Transportation Department, and once we receive them, the report should go out next week.
And what did your draft results show?
As Jose alluded to, there was widespread differences between the reported counts and the reported counts that we observed by watching hours and hours of videos versus what the APC counts and or manual counts that were recorded by the drivers showed.
So there are video cameras on the trolleys, and so you watched the videos,
yes,
and
sir.
You counted manually. And so were the counts above or below the technology or both?
Both.
Both. Was it skewed one way or the other? So were there more instances where it was above or more instances where it was below or it was about even?
The issue is we requested in total about 20 trolleys recordings, and we only received 9. And of those 9, 3 were the same, just different days. And by happenstance, those 3 trolleys were the largest differences. So it skewed the total as a whole.
Okay. You requested 20. You got 9?
Yes, sir.
And of those 9, 3 were... Okay, explain that to me.
They gave us substitute footage for some of the trolleys that we requested that they could not locate.
And was that footage intended for counting purposes, or is it that it wasn't retained? Because I think and correct me if I'm wrong, retention of footage, I think there's different requirements for its purpose. If it's a security camera on the trolley, if it's there for security purposes, I don't know if the retention period is the same as if it's there to verify the count of the passengers. Is there a reason why it was not retained?
If I could, sure. Commissioner, we did receive a draft report from the Office of Inspector General, and we are preparing a response. LSF, I think their representative is here today. They did provide a response to the OIG, and I think they would be best suited to answer the question that you've asked.
Okay, this is a representative of the vendor? Okay, where are they? Oh. Okay. Good morning. Tell us who you are. I know who you are, but I want it on the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. Mike Llorente with LSN Law. We represent Limousines of South Florida, LSF. LSF is your trolley operator. When this contract was procured, it did not include any automatic passenger counting equipment. The original contract that was approved by the Commission just about 9 years ago did not include automatic passenger counting equipment. The city, within the first year after approving the contract, approved an amendment number 1, directing our client LSF to contract with a specific vendor called TSO, who we do not represent, to install TSO equipment for passenger counting purposes. So at the direction of the city, LSF contracted with this vendor and installed passenger counting equipment as well as video cameras. I believe the video cameras are not intended for were not installed for the purpose of passenger counting. I think they were installed for the purpose of video cameras. Of security. I do know, and LSF has provided a detailed response to the OIG addressing these concerns, and you will see that in the final report. But I do know that there were some challenges recovering some videos for a couple of reasons. Number one, malfunction or inability on the part of TSO, the manufacturer and installer of the equipment. And number two, there were some operational issues as well that created challenges. For example, some of these trolleys, were being used for long hours, then sent to, the yard for washing, maintenance, repair, to be, sent out the very next morning. And I should mention, from what I understand, the video is installed on a hard drive on each trolley. So there's a process to go in, and it takes time. And so there were operational challenges recovering a few of them, and there were other issues with TSO recovering others.
Are you saying T as in Tom or P as in Paul?
TSO
is the vendor.
TSO is the vendor, the provider of the actual equipment that we were directed to install.
Okay. So do we know if any studies have been done on that particular equipment to determine the accuracy? And because I'm just wondering why there's a difference between – now I can see if you're doing a visual inspection – what happens if somebody gets up on the trolley and moves? Does Do they get counted as getting on or off when they're just moving chairs, moving seats? I don't know. Is that right. something you guys looked at, or did you look at just the door and when the door opened? Or
right. The beams are at the door, and the overhead are focused on the door or near the door. So even if the driver went in and out, we counted that because the system would have also counted that.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, to
pardon, Michael. When the driver gets on and off, that gets counted.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So I mean, I live across the street from a trolley, and they stop at Publix, and they're literally getting on and off, smoke breaks, whatever, on and off. So like, that will definitely boost the passenger count. Just the activity of the driver.
Because when you did your,
I don't know how long the wait time is, but they wait. At least by me, quite a long time, you know, good 5 minutes, and they're on and off, those guys. I didn't know that they were being counted as part of the passenger. Makes sense, but so that inflates the number.
Of the 9 trolleys that we looked at, I'm doing this from recollection, but I believe on the highest one, the driver went in and out 21 times during the day.
Okay. Yeah, and Mr. Chair,
you did your counts, you took that out, right, because that's not a passenger.
We have both. Okay. We have the counts with the driver and without.
Right. Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, just a couple additional points, if I may. Number Please. One, to address your question regarding reliability, just wanted to note that this equipment was installed 9 years ago. LSF in the past has expressed concerns to the city about, you know, how the equipment is outdated. As you can imagine, when you're dealing with technology, 5 years is sort of an eternity. I believe only 6 trolleys of the 30-something have equipment that was sort of refreshed, you know, or installed within the last few years. But the overwhelming majority was installed quite a bit ago. So that might lead to some challenges regarding reliability. The other point I'll make is that in the aggregate, you asked earlier if in the aggregate the numbers were overreported or underreported. They were underreported by about 15%. In other words, the numbers that the equipment, outdated as it may be, was generating in the aggregate was underreporting the actual ridership by about 50.
So if it's showing 100 riders, the real number is 115 or something like that.
Roughly, yes.
Roughly. Okay. So and do we know how expensive this equipment is? You said 6 of them had been refreshed, but the others have not. Do we know what the equipment cost is?
I do not. I know the original contract 9 or 10 years ago was for about $150,000. And that was software and some. I'm sorry, that was hardware and some of the initial software, et cetera. But I don't know the cost of new equipment.
So, and was that for the video equipment as well?
I believe so.
I think it was.
Oh, yeah, I believe so.
Okay, Jose, how many trolleys do we have right now?
33.
And Mr. Urente said 6 of them have been refreshed. The others have not been refreshed?
I would say we do have 12 low floor, and they were the most recent route that we implemented. And those have the Hila overhead cameras, the one that the newer technology. So out of 33, we have 12 that it's...
And is the overhead technology the better technology?
It's a newer technology.
It's the newer.
And we do have a cost for that. It costs for the APC itself $4,200 and $800 to install. So roughly it's $5,000 per trolley to install.
Trolley. Yeah. So you've got 33 trolleys. You've got 12 that have the equipment. You've got 21 that don't have the latest equipment.
That's correct.
And you need $5,000 for each. So you need roughly $105,000. Right?
If we stick with the same technology that we have on the low floor, then yes.
And was that part of your budget enhancement request this year?
Mr. Chair, it's actually part of a new of the request for information that we recently issued, and we just received responses. As you may be aware, we're looking to implement a new generation of municipal circulator service, which may or may not be trolleys. It could be perhaps some other type of vehicle.
Yeah.
And as part of that procurement, the commission decided to first issue an RFI and then an RFP. So we're in the RFI stage. We just received responses. But as part of that RFI, we requested the latest and greatest technologies, if you will. And that's all part of the, that will all be part of the new service going forward.
Okay, good. So, yeah, we shouldn't spend money on right now upgrading the old ones when we're going to get potentially new and have new equipment on that. So, I'm okay with that. Our Commissioner Ayala.
Jason, if you know, but Jose, you may know. I mean, what is our annual cost to run these trolleys in terms of payroll and the cost of renting the trolleys and fuel and everything all in?
So pre-pandemic, when we were operating full service, it was close to $12 million a year, 11 and change. We're currently operating still a reduced service level. It was increased last October. And the new number is about nine million.
Yeah, and the reason I started with this is, you know, it's a significant expense to the city, and so I want to know what the ridership is, and to in order to continue to justify this, or you know, if the ridership is so high, expand it. But I can't get a satisfactory answer on what our ridership is. That's my frustration, and that's why I asked the IG to participate. And regardless of, you know, I look forward to the answer. I've seen a draft and I've had conversation with Ms. Centurino. You know, the fact that it's so choppy and, you know, looks like unreliable and discrepancies, there shouldn't be discrepancies, right? There should be a process. If we need to see data, the data should be provided, and that's it. But the fact that, you know, many months we've been doing this now, we still don't have data, and the data we've gotten is, you know, there's some sort of noise in it. That doesn't give one assurance, doesn't give me any assurance that we can reliably count on these numbers being accurate. To the naked eye, when I see these trolleys going throughout our city continually empty, I struggle to see the number that I'm told, which is the ridership is 250,000 a month. Is that right? 250 a month? Yeah, I just don't believe that number, and I'm told that I'm wrong, so I'm like, okay, prove me wrong. And despite the IG's investigation and despite what we've heard today, nobody can prove me right or wrong. That's a problem. That's a problem. I have no problem being proven wrong, but you guys can't prove me wrong. You can't prove me right. That's a problem. And the fact that that doesn't bother you bothers me.
Well, it sounds like we've got numbers, but they're not completely accurate. But we can't get to the number. Maybe we can get to some trends in that. If it's, I don't know, Mr. Urente, you said 15% off. I don't know what your draft. I haven't looked at your draft report to see if the variation depends on the two different technologies and one's better than the other. I don't know. But does your audit address the bigger question that the vice mayor has mentioned about overall ridership? Does it show that they're 200,000 a month or 300,000 a month? It doesn't get into that.
No, our sample was only 9 days. One trolley per day. So we call it 9 trolley runs. So it was very small sample in comparison to the population.
Did you do the weekends or did you do weekdays or did you do?
We did a variety, and we did some with the new technology and some with the old technology.
Okay. But you didn't conclude your sample, you didn't extrapolate that
say
that it looks like based. Well, all right.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm just wondering, is there technology out there? I mean, with phones nowadays, you know, just with QR codes, like it's free. But, you know, we ask people to download an app, and when you get on, just scan. I mean, there's got to be technology out there that's a lot more reliable in real time.
Yeah. So, Jose, in the new, in the, I guess, the request for information, is that where we are now?
Yes.
Are we contemplating the same technology or a newer technology?
Much newer technology. We're contemplating both software and hardware. For a device to work, it has to have the software component as well as the hardware. And when there's a failure, it could be a failure in the software or a failure in the hardware. And what we're doing is I want to appreciate the Commissioner Arriola's your office for, you know, doing some of this light work. We've already reached out to, you know, many of these companies to see what products are available in the market. Because there may even be an opportunity to pilot something in this phase that we're in, where we're not in, you know, we're still on a month to month, if you will, with the current trolleys and looking to launch a new service, a new system, it may be a good opportunity for a pilot of a couple different technologies, software and hardware, to see what works best.
I like that a lot. Yeah, look, my goal here, I don't want to be on the – I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, no pun intended. I want to one is I want to make sure we're using taxpayer dollars wisely, but I also want to optimize this, right? With real data, we can see, you know, the most heavily utilized trolley routes and then double it, you know, and then the ones that are not heavily used, maybe find another method, you know. The fact that we can't get good data, it's really, I mean, it's 2023, like, this is kind of embarrassing. I really want to just fix this issue, guys, you know, and like, no sins, like, no one needs a, you know, CYA here. Just let's figure out how do we get good, reliable data through technology so that we can optimize ridership and optimize, you know, taxpayer investment in this, because it's a big cost. I'm not comfortable that we're getting a good ROI on this, you know, and I want to get comfortable.
Yeah, I'll take a look at this audit, but it sounds like if you only looked at 9 days, I don't know how I can extrapolate that to get to, and how long, this has been, we've been talking about this for not months, but years, I think.
It's been a while.
So let me ask this, Jose, what do we need to do? I like this idea of maybe a pilot program. So with the current trolleys right now, we could do that now. What would you need from us? Do you need, could you go to these different vendors and ask them if they want to volunteer their equipment for a pilot program so we can study it? Seems like they may want to do that with the potential that we might select them for a contract on whatever new vehicles we're going to have. Or do you need some funding from us? Do we need to put up a little bit of money to have some pilot program?
All very good questions, Mr. Chair. Right now we're doing our due diligence, if you will. We don't have a cost just yet. We haven't selected a technology. Even procuring the technology, I'd like to perhaps speak with our procurement department to see if this is something that can we just reach out to a few companies and say, you know, we like your product, give us a few, or if we have to go through some sort of process even for the pilot.
So I can tell you, you can talk to procurement. You don't have to do that. So all you have to do is just identify whoever these new technology companies are at the habit. Call them up. Tell them that we're going to be having a new program. We want to look at new technology. You can ask them if they would like to volunteer to provide that to the city for a study period, in which case, if there's no monetary amount that this body would have to approve, they can grant that to us, and then we can accept, the body could accept that. So now, if they want money, then you're going to need us to approve that in advance. But if they would like to demonstrate their technology, we can accept that. If they want to do that free of charge, for an opportunity for us to accept that. So you can reach out to them today and offer them that opportunity. And then that would come in the form of an offer, in which case then if it's less than $100,000, well, there's going to be no money involved. You may not even bring it. You may not even need to bring it to the commission to accept it. But if you do, then that's just an item that can be brought to the commission to accept their offer. Okay? So why don't you start working on that? Because I would like to study these different technologies before we decide what new vehicle, because once we decide whatever the new vehicle is going to be, then we're going to need to know what technology we want to put in them, right?
Right.
So why don't you work on that, and then why don't we bring this back in July for you to give us an update on how your conversations with these, and maybe Mr. Rente, since your client has the vehicle, they may also know which different companies have the latest technology, and you could provide some input for Jose, okay? And then we'll bring this back. Is that okay with you, Commissioner? We'll bring this back in July just to get an update on who wants to demonstrate their product in the city of Miami Beach.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to call up item 21. I'm very interested in what we can do with golf courses. We own two golf courses. Thank you for bringing this item, Commissioner Areola. Jason, I think you told me the other day we have increased our revenue in the one in Normandy. I know a few years ago when we were in the budget cycle, we were netting zero, and that's because the golf course here on Alton was making $500,000, but the one in Normandy was losing $500,000. But I'm told now that Normandy is doing much, much better. I think I asked that question. I think is it 100,000 now?
Yes, thank you. So the golf course, I think, through inflation of their pricing over the years. So we are projecting in 2024, I believe, Normandy Isle to be just slightly under $100,000 on a budgetary basis, though my understanding from
loss,
parks.
Right, a loss.
Loss.
Right. And then how much are we still netting, making about $500,000?
I believe the number's actually over $1 million, which is also part of why it's assisting with that I believe there's a $9 million redo of there. And so those excess funds will help that. And you'll see that for next Thursday with the $1 million recommendation for that golf course.
Okay. Commissioner Ariola, this is your item. So did you have any specific recreational uses that you were interested in or just in general, or you want the staff to study this?
Yeah, I mean, look, golf courses are a funny thing, right? Yeah. They are, round numbers, they're each, give or take, 160 acres, right, of land that is, used by, 100, 200 people a day on a good day. We have a housing shortage. Affordability housing is a chronic problem in the city as well as, Dade County. And, we have golf courses galore. You got to think about, priorities in life. And it's one of these things about society. You've got golf courses that are used typically by, a certain economic class, and you have housing shortages. Something that is, weird to me, when we talk about priorities. But for me, the issue, leaving housing aside, is just recreational uses for our children. To what extent that, can we take a little piece of the golf courses or reallocate them, so that we can use them for recreational uses for our kids, whether they're soccer fields or just playgrounds or things like that. So my ask is to, ask our staff to look at, our golf courses and are there portions of the golf course that can either be redesigned or repurposed for recreational uses for children.
And I see Ms. Rebarb is here from our Parks Department. So have you guys, tell us who you are so it's on the record.
Good afternoon, John Rebar, Parks and Recreation Director. I would like to leave this meeting with clear direction, because looking at that many acres as you opened up with, well, there's obvious alternative uses. And it's to fine tune that, you can almost place anything there from housing to, if that's what commission wanted to do, I want to leave here knowing what homework to meet your expectations when I come back. Because I wouldn't be coming with any recommendations, specific recommendations.
It might be unfair to put that on you. Maybe we should kick this to the full commission for a discussion. To what extent can we get four or five votes to actually do something here? Because what will happen is the golf lobby, our friends who golf will be really pissed off at us for even exploring this. And we got to make a decision whether we're willing to do things that might piss off friends, because we're trying to find something that, in my opinion, for sure, and I'm not a golfer, but most of my friends are, the highest and greatest use of our land, to me, is not golf courses. It should be to provide housing or, parks for children, and not for the elite few who like to play golf.
You know, golf courses are a drain on our natural resources because they have to be, you know, chemically treated that, you know, including Roundup, including a lot of harmful chemicals that end up in our water, that end up polluting our bay, just to keep our golf courses nice and green for, you know, 100 people a day to
play. So I would say we're...
So, I mean, I got some issues with golf courses, but whatever. But at a minimum, I'd like to see if there's you know, some areas on our golf courses that we could, you know, fence off and use for children's playgrounds or children's activities. I would like that. Maybe we send this to the full commission, see if there's a strong willingness to explore this before we make John, you know...
Yeah, so we probably around. Not going to put high-rise condos on...
No.
But and we know that. So, but I think, yeah, I'm supportive as well. I think the golf course just here on Alton, for example, their tennis... courts as part of the campus, right?
Pickleball now, but we're
pickleball. So there may be some pockets of, you know, we're not going to change an 18-hole course to a 17-hole course, but there may be some opportunity to, you know, provide some enhanced recreational opportunities there. Commissioner Fernandez.
Thank you. And I'll tell you, one of the issues that I have with the golf courses is that they're publicly owned lands. Owned by the taxpayers of this city, their maintenance subsidized at times by the taxpayers of this city, but every taxpayer of the city can't use it, and that's an issue unless you play golf. You step foot on the golf course, and you're not playing golf. Yeah, sorry, John. Yeah, John looked confused for a moment. It's public unless you're just trying to walk through the golf course, and then you get kicked off the golf course. But then you talk about doing anything creative with these lands, such as, and I think it should be limited to just park space. I really don't think there should be anything else here other than green space for the public use. But then the people who react loudest is the tourism industry, the hospitality industry, that they say, you can't touch that. It's going to hurt bringing heads into the beds, and it's going to hurt us as a destination. It's going to hurt us with the convention center. And those are the loudest voices that I hear when we talk about these spaces. But what about our residents? The use that our residents could have of these 115 acres. And that's not to say that we would completely do away with golf course use, because certainly there might be a percentage of our population that may want that. But what else could you do for the public enjoyment and the use of this space that we're not providing right now? So I think we should be measured with it, certainly. I think we need to contemplate what other public green space park use we could introduce in here without completely eliminating golf courses. And I would certainly invite us to engage, and I would ask you, John, to also ask the area homeowner associations about this. Because I think not everyone would be in favor, and I don't think not everyone would be against. I think that there is a variety. I know we've heard from people, from residents, that strongly feel we need soccer fields. And perhaps this could be a good place for something like that. So I think it's definitely something worth exploring.
I mean, at a minimum, we're talking about pickleball and tennis courts. You know, could we add some courts, you know, to the facilities we already have, you know?
So, Commissioner, why don't your suggestion is let's move it back to the commission just to see
what the appetite is.
Yeah, and if you'll make that motion, I think you'll have support. So let's...
Yeah, so nothing for you to do now unless you want to start thinking about it, but let's move it for the full commission, and then we can... You know, if there's a strong sense among the commissioners that we do want to do something, then you'll have your marching order, so you're not on a wild goose chase. If it's going to be divisive and we're not going to get strong consensus, then we'll just let it die, because I don't want to waste your time.
Okay, so let's show that move back to July commission meeting.
So move it to a discussion item on the July commission meeting to get direction on this item. Okay.
Okay, we'll close that item here. I need to call up 12. That's my item, just to say that I've had staff look at this, and this does not seem to be feasible at this point. So with that, I'm going to withdraw the item. So I'm going to save you a lot of time.
What happened with item number 12?
No, well, this is the – remember I brought this to look at whether or not we want to take that parking lot and change it into a parking garage, right?
Right.
And so the community doesn't seem to support it. It got killed before because there are two houses there. And so it doesn't seem like it's feasible, but I'm happy to have a conversation right now. So let's I won't withdraw it. But I doesn't sound like it's feasible, and that's what I'm hearing from staff. And it doesn't sound like there's support in that particular community. You know, the problem is there's plenty of parking there. It's just commercial. And so, you know, what we're trying to do is solve some parking needs with the construction that's going to be going on the street. And one of the ideas also is you could reconfigure that lot, you know, because it's right now it's not very efficient. But the problem is to reconfigure that may cost $3 or $4 million to pick up 5 or 6 parking spaces. So, you know.
I'm trying to envision, what are the two houses that are there now?
Two condos on each side of that, right?
Okay.
And so I'm told that's how one of the ways it got killed some years back is, you know, having a parking garage between those two. I don't know. We can keep it here and have an additional conversation about it.
I have to say, I have not heard the opposition to it. Is the opposition recent? Is this recent opposition
I've heard that. But let's do this. Let's just keep it. Let's bring it back.
If you don't mind.
Yeah, let's bring it back in July and let's see. And they'll have an opportunity to talk with some of the people in the community and the neighbors and see. The other thing I had looked at is whether or not it could be a combination workforce housing project and parking. And but yeah, so let's.
I mean, the need is there. I mean, and I would love to look at it more.
Okay.
And I have not heard the opposite. I had actually heard support because I think there are people that realize a long term need for it. But
all right, well we'll leave it here and then we'll bring it. Let's bring it back in July, Jason, and see. In the meantime, we can all talk to some of the people in the community and see if we want to continue talking about it. I'm fine for that. So, and with that, it's 12:30 and we have a time certain. And so I apologize if people have been waiting, but we will. Have to defer any item that hasn't been heard. We'll hear that in July. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, buddy.